This week's episode of This Is Only a Test is made possible with support from Evidence. Evidence unique distributed data model protected with end-to-end cryptography readily adjusts to meet growing business and security requirements and minimizes risk with rigorous access controls and user consent capture processes, which supports businesses' ongoing compliance with increasingly strict data regulations. Visit evidentid.com/test and see how Evident can help you confidently verify your customers, employees, and vendors with less risk.
Hey, let's start the show.
For Thursday, November 14th, 2019, welcome to This Is Only a Test, the official podcast of tested.com. Hello and welcome to a brave new world. We are now in the middle of the streaming wars. The streaming wars have really begun. Or have they? Well,
I think so.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that. We're going to talk about that, of course. Well, I'm Norm here, and we got the full team. Jeremy Williams.
What up?
The sky? What's the proper response to that? What do people say when what up?
You know. What up back? You just say, what up? You say, what up?
Yo.
Yo.
Yo. And Kishore Hari.
I'm on the whitest podcast ever made right now. What's happening over there?
It's so true. So true. And we are here, of course, today, not only talk about technology news, VR, pop culture, but also baby birthdays.
Oh.
How was your weekend?
I was away. I was in Berlin.
Oh, that's why we didn't see you.
Yes, I was there.
Getting a birthday present for Avery?
Yes. Man, would you like a piece of the Berlin Wall? Is he interested in such things?
No.
I was there for a conference, and it was the 30th anniversary of the fall of the Berlin Wall. And it was amazing. There are all these exhibits around town, and art installations and talks and all of this kinds of stuff. The exhibitions were particularly moving. There's one that was these like intimate close-up videos of people on different sides of walls around the world talking about their experience. I thought it was really meaningful. And the conference that I was at, one of the organizers at the end talked about the role like many U.S. presidents have had in speeches at the Berlin Wall, and sent our president a piece, one of the last large pieces of the Berlin Wall, with a message etched on it. And I mean, all the politics aside, what was funny is like he did a presentation about it, and it was like they're packing up the covenant, the Ark of the Covenant. And like shipping it to the U.S.
Wait, they packed it up on stage. They showed the piece, and
they had like a slideshow of it being packed up, and it got sent to this government facility. And I'm like, holy shit, the Ark of the Covenant. That's where the Ark of the Covenant is. Well, it's pretty cool.
Is it easy to get a piece these days? I remember it used to be
little pieces.
Yeah, you
but they sent. They sent like a full slab, like a full section of the wall.
How do you get a little piece of the wall? Are there gift shops?
Every store in Berlin sells a little piece of the wall.
What are the odds it's real?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all just concrete, right?
Okay. Yeah, and asbestos.
I think it's probably...
Oh, well, freedom
then,
on one
then
side,
I should definitely
on the other
give,
side.
Give right. Avery a piece.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Well,
Berlin, very cool city.
Did you have any good food?
No. Yes. No, I did. But nothing like... I had some authentic German food, but nothing... Nothing worth talking about.
That's coming through. I'm going to take your toy away.
Oh, you gave it to me.
That audio you heard is a 3D print that Jeremy had gifted Kishore right before we started the podcast. And so you took it away like you would a child.
Here's
you would your son.
Here's a fidget toy during the podcast. Stop fidgeting, son.
Jeremy, how was your weekend?
Okay, it was good. It was good. I have a new game at home for the Nintendo Switch, and I have been waiting to talk about it.
Luigi's Mansion.
No, do you have that yet?
Yeah.
Okay. I hear that's very good too.
No, it's a fitness game called Ring Fit
Adventure. Oh my god, you have
you know about this?
This is the ring.
Yes,
this is the Wii Fit from the Switch. The yes. shake weight for the Switch.
Right. So it's apparently there's something
work those thighs.
There's something called
work one thigh. Independent.
What are you talking about?
There's only one ring. You can't work both thighs at the same time.
That's how it works. So apparently there's something called Pilates.
Okay, tell me more.
And
would you like to know more?
And they use a ring for a lot of the exercises. And Nintendo took this ring, which is like a foot and a half in diameter.
So we're not talking about like hula hoop style,
no.
big ring. This is literally like Disc of Tron style.
That's like Frisbee. This is bigger than that.
A little bigger, okay, but, yeah. But it's not solid. It is a hoop.
Yes, and you attach one of the Joy-Cons to the top of it, and then you attach the other one to a little strap that goes on your thigh. And then the game senses how much you're pressing, compressing this ring and how far you're stretching it apart.
Based on what pressures?
I have not actually investigated that because I'm curious. I thought maybe it was using the IR thing to like measure how much it sees.
Is the ring passive or
I think it might be active. I think that it might have like some sort of resistor sensor in there.
Well, you know how with some VR hand controllers, like the Manus VR, they put bend sensors.
Exactly.
And so those things exist. These are strips relatively cheap that can detect how much bend force.
Yes, and okay. I think those work on resistance. And that might be how it's working because it's quite accurate.
Oh.
And the other one is on your legs, so it can tell how much you're bending your knees or or whether you're sitting or not, and also if you're bending. And then you basically play these games where it's a really stripped down role-playing game where you're running through the world and you're physically running and then you're using the hoop to vacuum up coins and eventually fight bad guys. And my kids, I have a 9 and a 12-year-old, he's almost 13, and they're crazy about it.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to understand, my kids don't come home and want to exercise. Like, that is not on their radar.
They don't want to play Pistol Whip?
But they want to play this game, like, every day.
What are the mini games? Like, are they party game style mini games? Are they more fitness oriented?
There are mini games, but the adventure of Ring Fit Adventure is more of just like you're going from one set of bad guys to the next. And there's a boss
true
guy.
Gamification.
You're suggesting it's actually a good game.
The game, whatever, it's got the mechanics that kids like these days, which is a leveling system.
Microtransactions.
Hats.
And yeah, basically like
Minecraft
light role playing. Like I don't even know if there's collectibles in this game. Like that, and they're still
loot
into
boxes.
I'm blown away by
calorie drops.
How successful this game is. My wife has also played it. It even takes your pulse using the IR sensor.
Oh,
and like you put your thumb up on it, and it can get a waveform.
Nintendo, man, that's
they're
clever.
Using it all over the place. It's super great. I mean, I'm really happy to see everyone using it. I'm the only one who hasn't used it yet.
Like, this seems exactly that. And when we make the analogy of like Nintendo Switch is almost like a weird Kickstarter idea. Like, this seems like a weird Kickstarter product, except it's built into the functionality of one of the most successful video game consoles of this generation.
Yeah.
Right. And the Switch, who could have imagined when they originally designed the Switch with the idea being, okay, you could play it and it has a handheld or you could play it as a TV. That was the selling point. A dual function game console also works for VR lights, also works with cardboard accessories, also works with fitness. That's ingenious.
It doesn't work with the new one though, does it? Because the new one,
oh, the Switch Lite,
it doesn't have the controllers that come off of it.
Yeah,
interesting.
You know, it looks like a steering wheel, this thing. They should make it like adaptable to Mario Kart too.
Oh, and you can play on like aggressive drift or tilt by compressing the rings together.
Yeah, but then there's like resistance to it, so you feel the effects of going around those corners.
I mean, this is why it should be a little more of an open platform, but it's not.
Nintendo, I'm open for work and consulting.
It's interesting because less than a month ago, I tweeted an interest in workout video games and ellipticals or treadmills that are attached to video games.
Yeah, yeah.
And I got a couple suggestions, but nobody mentioned this, and here it is. It's great. I mean, it only came out this month, I think, or last month. But it's a solid experience.
Do you feel like it's worth it? Because it's expensive. It's like $80 or something, right?
Yeah. I mean, if it's, you know, people spend a lot more than that on workout equipment.
Oh, a lot more.
You know, if it's something to do at home and it seems to have a hook.
Perfectly timed for a holiday release.
Yeah.
It could be one of those gifts for people, for kids who have Switches or if they have Nintendo Switches. themselves.
How about you, Norm? What did you do this weekend?
Oh, I put on a birthday party for the baby. Jeremy, you were there, mm-hmm. and you were there. Kishore, you weren't there. I'm sorry. That was a whole thing. I didn't realize how important a kid's first birthday would be. Not to the kid. The kid doesn't care. He was asleep for half of it.
Yeah.
But for the parents and for the parents' friends and family, it became a whole thing. Sleepless nights leading up to it. We was a couple all-nighters on Danica's part to prepare for that party.
Wow.
Yeah, you were there. You saw how much decor and decoration there was. And we hosted about 45 people over the course of the day.
She made her own cake pops.
That was a huge success. She designed and made her own cake pops. We found on Amazon a cake pop stand that was honestly could be improved. I think there's a market out there for people to laser cut their own cake pop stands and sell them on Etsy. Definitely a small market there. And the big, huge success was we had two entertainment areas for other children. So people brought their kids. You brought your kid.
Yeah, 12
year old. A little older, but a lot of people brought, you know, their six-year-olds or their infants. And, you know, we have a playpen because we need to corral baby Avery. But we filled one playpen with a ball pit. So we had a small ball pit. Mm-hmm. And kids love ball pits.
Yep.
Turns out you can buy like 400 balls on Amazon for like $25 and filled up 1,000 balls in this ball pit, and kids it's like a sauna. It's a hot tub for children.
Leave it out. That's how
Be. Yeah, yeah.
That's how you should be watching TV. It's like, inside of a ball pit.
And we didn't, you know, it's not like the ball pit's massive, right? All it needs to be is like a 4 foot by 4 foot, you know, area and filled up to maybe knee height. Kids were jumping in there and like burying themselves underneath the balls that we had it next to our one-up arcade stand-up cabinet, and they were playing the arcade standing up while still in the ball pit.
That's the life.
Oh my god, that's like it's a hot tub. It's like adult in a hot tub watching a movie, like playing a game console. This is the kid equivalent of that. They didn't want to leave the ball pit, but they leaned up and were playing Millipede on the arcade cabinet. Now, what luxury. And then the other thing is that because we had balloons, we also had our big playpen area, you know, more of a 12 foot by 12 foot area.
Yeah.
And that was filled with inflatable balloons, and kids love that.
Yeah. That's how I won over Avery, was with the balloons.
Oh.
I arrived and he wouldn't let me hold them. And
then that became a whole thing. So Will and Gina arrived, and we talked on the podcast last week or 2 weeks ago where there was a whole tragic encounter. Did not get remedied, so Will also failed to hold the baby. His wife, no problem. And then you came, and we tried giving the baby to you.
Nope.
It didn't work either.
Not initially.
Immediately frown face. Mm-hmm. Although, later on that day, we gave the baby to your son, and your son was able to hold the baby, no problem.
Well, he's got the kid energy.
Yeah.
So Avery looked at him, he's like, okay, we're one.
But then you successfully won over the baby.
Mm-hmm. He's like, this kid's been working out with a ring fit.
And then
he can hang.
And then we did Keep It Up, which is one of the great, all-time great balloon games, where you just keep it up.
Oh, you mean like just kind of like volleyball?
Yeah, the rules are in the title.
Keep it up in the air,
yes.
The balloon inflated. Yes. Yeah, a couple of balloons pop, but you know, that's how it was. You got a photo of your son holding the baby.
That's delightful.
We really, really, we just wanted people to hold the baby to get us the sense, so they could get a sense of how heavy he is. And I'm telling you,
that's a one-year-old, that's a big baby.
Yeah, it's a giant baby.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's like almost 30 pounds.
He's not walking yet, is he?
No.
Okay.
Which sucks, because we have to hold him the whole time. Yeah. So thanks to everyone who came. We, of course, did this thing, which is a tradition in America. Apparently, you haven't heard of it, the cake smash. I wasn't aware of it until, you know, kind of this, I guess I knew about it with Will's kid. Right. When Will's kid and Gary's kid turned one, they also had cake smashes. But apparently it's a whole tradition in the States where when you have your kid turns one, you give them sugar for the first time. You give them a cake and you let them go wild and smash the cake and put the sugar in their mouth. And it's adorable and you take lots of pictures. Mm. And so a lot of the birthday party was building up to this cake smash. And he didn't really deliver. He was kind of shy, a little furtive with the cake. He can put his finger in the frosting and licked his hand, but didn't really smash. And so we did a second cake smash without the pressure of an audience.
Yeah.
And we filmed that last night, took pictures. Not only filmed it with our phones, but also filmed it in VR. and got a couple of, I borrowed the camera from the office that we used to film the Tested VR series and filmed him smashing the cake.
Maybe it'll be in Tested VR version 2.0.
It's an Easter egg. You got to click the special part of Adam's cave to reveal the cake smash baby.
You know, saying he didn't deliver is a little harsh for a one-year-old. I'm going to say maybe we did deliver a calm environment for him in order to feel comfortable smashing the cake.
Yeah. Everyone's responsible.
All right.
But happy birthday to the baby. And that's all I'm going to say about that. Oh, I want to give a shout out. I was going to talk about this, but I knew I'd forget. This weekend, there is a Gundam convention, small little convention in San Francisco. So if you're in the San Francisco area, it's going to be in the Westfield. It's being run by a local Gundam shop called New Type HQ. And I believe it's at the Westfield Mall on the second floor, one of their party spaces. You can go to New Type HQ and find out. But I'll be there on Saturday.
And there's going to be building.
Gundam builders. And there'll be a whole competition and workshops for applying decals, for weathering, for building dioramas. And so if you're interested in that type of model kit building and you're in San Francisco, you have nothing to do on Saturday, Sunday, head on over to the Westfield shopping mall.
Top story this week.
What could it be?
Oh, Apple, right?
Unlikely.
Unlikely. Okay. The streaming wars. That's our top story this week. Not only do Apple TV Plus launch November 1st.
Yeah.
But now it's past November 12th, so we have the second big new player. Disney Plus is live. Not without some technical problems on launch day, but those seem to have been worked out.
I got some bugs on the Apple TV app for sure. Mm. Like scrolling around the menus can get a little wonky. I actually had two versions of the video playing at the same time, a second apart at one point.
What do you mean?
Like the effect was an echo.
Oh, yeah. On one device?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
On Apple TV. So, yeah, there's definitely some bugs.
Okay. But now we have a good sense of the menu interface. And in fact, it is not only on, you know, your Rokus and your Apples, but it's also native on Samsung TVs and LG TVs.
I can do it if you want.
And are you going to load up the...
What's that? Is that HDMI?
No. It's a native app.
No, yeah. Okay.
Boom. Okay. Native app.
Boom.
Have it queued up to Star Wars. But it really is exactly how they sold it, right? The big pillars of Disney Plus are Disney content, Pixar, Marvel, Star Wars, and
Nat Geo,
which is like in companies.
Everyone was in Nat Geo. That's where all the technical problems from the load management of everyone hitting the Nat Geo.
So Fox, I'm really surprised Simpsons is not a pillar here because there are 30 seasons of The Simpsons.
It's on the banner scrolling up top, but it's
there you
not,
go. Yeah. Yeah. So this is the same interface for all the devices. There have been a couple stories out about how, while there is this new streaming war right now because all these services, and you have HBO Max coming out next year, CBS All Access already out with increasing content. You know, which of these are supposed to really be competing against each other, or which of these are really, they're all competing for your dollar and your time. Time primarily, right? Because some of these cost more than others, and some people are more happy to, you know, subscribe to multiple ones. But really is like, what is that you're going to be watching on a day-to-day basis? And when you spend that hour, 2 hours every night putting on something on TV, what service are you going to? I'm not sure that Apple TV, or sorry, that Disney Plus is a direct competitor to HBO or Apple TV or even Netflix.
Because it's not original content.
It's not. There's not a lot of original content.
It's all stuff you've seen. But the stuff you've seen is some of the best stuff ever created for film and television.
Like, this seems less like going to the movie theater. When I think of subscribing to HBO and even some extent Netflix, it's like going to the movie theater and enjoying something new and premium. This is like a library pass. Going to the vault and watching the classics.
But it also has to do with the demographics of your family.
Yeah.
You know, I bet that people with young kids are more likely to subscribe to Disney Plus just because it has this library of, you know, safe content.
Incredible library of all the old Mickey Mouse cartoons, Disney Junior, all that stuff.
I think we also say that now, 6 months from now, are we going to be singing a slightly different tune when, you know, Mandalorian is already finished and like two of the Marvel shows are in motion. The original library is just going to get bigger and bigger.
Yes, it will, but it's going to be spaced out. All that stuff from the Marvel, you know, phase 4 which includes the Disney Plus MCU shows. I mean, the first one is still in production, Falcon and Winter Soldier, and that won't be until end of next year. So it's going to be a slow rollout. It's not going to be Netflix style. Here's 10 original shows. I can't keep up. It's going to be manageable.
And it's certainly not going to be like Netflix where you're like, surprise, here's a thing.
Yeah.
All of a sudden.
Big marketing campaigns, big buildups, big Comic-Con presences, D23, all that jazz.
All that being said, I was shocked when I opened this and saw Star Wars in 4K. I wasn't expecting 4K.
You mean the movies?
Yeah.
Dolby Vision, 4K HDR.
Yeah, I wasn't aware you couldn't buy it in 4K, you know, on Blu-ray 4K. I have never bought a Blu-ray 4K. It's just, so I assumed that they were out, but that apparently that's one of the great new things about the service. I didn't know that.
So back catalog, of course, we've talked about this. There's Star Wars stuff, all the Clone Wars, all the movies. There's Disney. Disney's probably the biggest bucket.
Sorry. Well, hang on one second. I was surprised Last Jedi is not on here yet.
I think that's just like Captain Marvel is not on here. There is some exclusivity with
Captain Marvel is on here.
But there's some exclusivity with Netflix, exactly.
Oh, that hasn't expired yet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Force Awakens is the newest Star Wars.
They had an 11th hour deal with Stars in order to get a lot of these things.
Right. And that's why there will be an ad. While this is primarily an ad-free experience, there will be an ad for Stars as a separate add-on package.
That's how we got Endgame on there.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Right. $7 a month. So new content. I'm on the originals. If you're watching the video right now, like in terms of our audience, you and I, Mandalorian really is the big flagship thing. It's not really High School Musical. There are a couple documentary series. Pixar has their Spark Shorts. This is the short films that aren't in front of the films, mm-hmm. but the ones that they've kind of worked with internal teams and kind of fostered directorial talent mm-hmm. within Pixar to tell short stories. They have a Forky series, you know, Forky Asks a Question, a bunch of like little mini documentaries around the Disney like universe. Like it really feels like made for Disney fans. There's this one called The Imagineering Story, which is directed by the same director who did the Pixar story. And it's a ongoing series.
I watched about half of the first episode.
Good.
Jeremy, did you watch it too?
I've watched in its entirety five of the things on this screen.
Holy
so
cow.
Imagineering Story?
It's excellent.
It is really good.
It's absolutely one of the best things on Disney Plus. And it's the first in a series.
Yes.
It is a full-fledged documentary.
Right.
And the first one is all about basically the life of Walt Disney through and basically beginning at Disneyland to when he died.
And let's be clear, these are elaborate marketing material that you're watching. But again, it's what Disney fans want, right?
The Wonderful World of
Disney did the exact same thing.
I didn't feel like I was being sold go to Disneyland in watching this experience, like that Freeform documentary that was about Galaxy's Edge that came out, that was literally like people turning camera being like, this is awesome.
It's not TV special, right? But it is all in service of the Disney 100%. Magic and Disney mythos.
Yes. It's also on Disney Plus, so you would expect that.
Exactly. And there's going to be one about employees who work in the Disney family ecosystem, whether it's in Disneyland or in broadcast. I think it's called Day in a Life.
You do get to go inside the Matterhorn.
Oh, my goodness.
And it answers the age-old question, is there a basketball court? Yes.
Don't spoil.
It does answer that
don't
question.
Don't spoil.
Won't spoil. But it's good.
That one I'm very looking forward to, and I guess the lead I've buried is that I have not seen anything here. I'm so sorry.
We had a long thread this weekend.
Ball
Everyone
dropped.
Watched The Mandalorian as soon as it drops. I watched it like 10 o'clock that night.
Monday night.
Norm didn't get to it. We've now agreed that we're going to spoil it in its entirety punishment.
My excuse is that I am in solidarity with our UK brethren
who
do not have access to Disney Plus.
Oh, good.
It's a US launch.
Okay.
So I'm gonna wait.
Good.
Next week. They won't get it next week either. It was just a busy week. But feel free to talk about it.
If it were a movie, I would say maybe we should give it a week. But this is TV series. The second episode comes out Friday.
Yeah, and it's only an episode.
Yeah.
So let's be fair though.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people who might be in the same boat who have not watched The Mandalorian.
I don't think we spoil any of the content pieces because there are like hooks and and storylines.
Dude, but you can do a 5-minute spoiler window.
Why don't we talk about just initial reactions? What did you think, Jeremy?
I liked it. I saw it twice. I watched it once by myself, once with my son in the evening, and it's what you expected. I mean, it's what I expected. It's a TV series, which means the pacing is a little slower, but it's set in the Star Wars universe, and it's like the universe that I remember. And I turned to my son right before it started, and I said, "This takes place right after Jedi." And he said, "The Last Jedi?" And I realized for the first time.
And then you shook your head for a while.
It wasn't in like dismay. Like I completely understand. That's a perfectly valid thing for him to ask. I realized that we can't say Jedi anymore and assume that everyone knows what we mean. Mm-hmm. So anyway.
I don't know. I didn't like it. I loved it. I thought it was so good. It was the callback to the space western that A New Hope really delivered. And I know we were expecting that from the trailer, but it delivered it in spades. Just like it was watching John Wayne in the Star Wars universe. And what I also loved about it is that it didn't explain stuff. They're like key characters that we meet that I don't know the names of them yet. Mm-hmm. And they were like on screen for a while and talking. And I was like, and I don't care. Like, that's what I remember about New Hope is like, I don't think I know like all the names of like characters from A New Hope still. Yeah. You know them from like the toys and all the stuff afterwards. It like doesn't fill in all of these details. So you're following the story of the Mandalorian and it just is like, it drops you into the story. It doesn't give you all this exposition like, he's a Mandalorian that's trying to survive none of that. It just like, here it is, and you're just figuring it out as it goes along. There are all these kind of like mysterious elements that come up, but they feel natural and not just sort of placed there.
I can't talk about this without spoiling a little bit. Are we okay with that?
I'll ask one more question before the spoilers. Yeah. Does this feel like a more mature show or a show not necessarily for kids?
It's TVPG.
Oh, okay.
Which is not to say there isn't killing. There's definitely Star Wars laser blast killing. Mm.
Okay. Yeah, I would say the first episode is fine for kids. Like no doubt if you're fine with the laser blasting, it does the mood of it does not indicate that it's going to be kid friendly.
It's not Poe Dameron making a who's on first joke.
No, there is not a single laugh in this. Or maybe there's like a half laugh.
Okay.
This is not a delightful thing. This is like watching an old spaghetti western type movie.
I feel so much better. I haven't evacuated since the solstice. That's a funny line.
It was. It was. Yeah. But I mean, I wouldn't say this is like full of humor or something.
No.
Okay. No. We're going to, for the next 5 minutes, go into a little bit of spoilers. So, Kishore, can you turn the light on the back? And for those of you watching the video, we're going to change
this. Why don't you change this?
I'm going to change it to what?
I don't know.
To Mandalorian?
Sure.
Oh, no, okay. We've gone red.
I did it.
Okay, spoilers. Good. For those of you listening to
that's
the
not
audio,
even in frame.
It's.
I don't think that's in frame anymore.
Kishore is going to change the other light. For the next 5 minutes, if you're listening to the audio, we will be talking light spoilers, Jeremy.
Light.
About there's no the Mandalorian.
It's a 40-minute show.
Okay. Well, yeah, so you only got 5 minutes to talk about it.
All right.
Okay, here we go.
So first of all, the robot who is clearly a part of the show.
Oh, you're just jumping in.
Yeah.
Late into the show.
Yes. Yeah, so the robot shows up. He's the biggest badass of the show.
Like
he's the biggest droid badass we've met.
Yes.
K2SO is going to be like, holy shit, this is a droid.
You know how you wished you kind of saw K2SO before he was converted? Mm. Like, this is, what is he, an 88, I-88 unit?
IG-88 was the bounty hunter that was shown in Empire, but this is not that. It's the same model.
It's a model. He's referred to as an IG-88 model or IG model.
IG model. I think IG-11, I want to say.
Okay. Well, the Mandalorian says to him, IG model, hold down, you know, and then he gets shot and, you know, because he didn't realize he was in the guild. So also it creates this whole, it expands the mythos of the bounty hunters. Now they have a guild and Mandalorian's inside of it. And it's explained that like people who want to put out bounties don't necessarily want to hire the guild anymore because it's a little more expensive. They don't mind it getting a little messy. So they're setting this up as like there are official bounty hunters, and then there's kind of
much like in Battle Angel Alita. You're okay. Registered.
Okay.
Registered as a bounty hunter.
So
you can claim the bounty.
The IG model is also a member of the guild. And so he and Mandalorian have that in common.
As a question for spoilers.
Yeah.
This presumably takes place between episodes 6 and 7?
Yeah.
So...
Seems like it's been maybe 4 or 5 years since Return of the Jedi, something like that.
He won't accept Imperial or Empire credits. For instance, at the beginning of the movie, because
the Empire
there is no Empire.
Yes. Yeah. The economies of the galaxy are in disarray.
Exactly. So he meets up with this awesome android who just kicks so much ass. It's so much fun to watch.
My slight disappointment there is because there is going to be a K2SO / what's his name from Rogue One TV show, a prequel to Rogue One. But that's set between episodes 3 and 4, and so there's no opportunity for in a universe meetup.
Yeah, but this isn't a sassy robot like K2SO.
Okay,
it's just badass.
Yeah, he's super badass, and he's almost Vulcan in his efficiency and the way that he speaks with the Mandalorian. I think you'll really like this droid.
Maybe I'll relate even.
He's one of my favorite droids that I think in the Star Wars universe.
Great.
I won't spoil the very ending because that is worth, I will give that to you as a gift.
Thank you.
Okay?
Woo.
But definitely, it is a great ending. Neither Peter or I saw it coming. And that leads to so many more questions, and that's the great thing about this first episode is that it poses questions.
I think the pacing of it as a Western still caught me off guard. He's just walking through the universe with this kind of methodical pace the entire time.
There are scenes where you almost hear like ooh wee wee ooh.
Yeah,
it's like it really is like old West.
You could just play an old Spaghetti Western.
On that point, though, the music is very different from any Star Wars that I've seen before. It's got electronic components to it, but it's really well done. It's definitely a science fiction vibe.
I would say the mythos around the Mandalorians themselves as a race is beautifully hinted at and teased in this way that's very inviting. I think I saw Boba Fett in the corner.
No way. Really?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Very much so.
Okay. I mean,
or somebody that had very much armor in his styling and color.
Nick Nolte plays one of the characters.
Yeah.
And he's...
Don't know his name.
He's probably...
Did not say it on screen.
He might be my favorite non-droid character in the episode. I liked him a lot. He has this phrase that he says over and over, which is, I have spoken, which is the way he punctuates whatever he just said.
And so it's done.
Yes. It kind of means conversation's over.
Got it.
Do what I said, and I love it. So that's
how's Werner Herzog?
Werner Herzog is great.
Oh my God, so good.
He's Werner Herzog.
But it's there's nothing more than what we saw in that early teaser. That's what you get, and you want more.
Yeah.
Every phrase he speaks is creepy. It's wonderful.
I guess I will say we don't meet a lot of people that have been teased will be in the show.
Even like the promo stuff has a female character who probably isn't the one who gives him the armor because she has her helmet off.
Mm-hmm.
Mandalorian has yet to take his helmet off, and it's even mentioned in the show.
I hope he doesn't for a long time.
He's asked by one of his bounties, is it true you never take your helmet off? So that's a thing, which is, it's funny, right? They hire such an A-list actor or whatever.
Paul Pascal,
And then have him not show him.
All right.
It's a bold move.
It's a very Vader-esque thing to do.
It's excellent. And I know I'm raising expectations, but it feels like a return stylistically to A New Hope.
And I know some of the filmmakers are trying to do that too. And to their credit, there's a lot of practical effects in all the Star Wars films. But this is so... They take moments. The camera settles on some of the practical stuff they're doing. There's a Scalacious Crumb. Is that what his name? Crumb?
Mm-hmm.
Scalacious Crumb character watching another one being cooked.
Wow.
And you just kind of watch him, and it's all, puppeted, and you got the voice. At one point you hear, they try to take off. The Mandalorian ships tries to take off, and you get that whirring sound effect from the Falcon when it breaks down and it won't go to light speed. Mm-hmm. And it just feels like our Star Wars. It's really good.
No, I don't want to be too precious about it. We got elements of that in Force Awakens too. On Jakku, where it was kind of a broken down universe,
mm-hmm.
And I just think the Western really plays. I think it's going to be hard to keep up that Western aesthetic through like 10 episodes. So I think they're going to have to quicken the pace a little bit. But as a scene setter, top notch.
All right. Let's turn the light back to non-spoiler mode. And anything else you want to say about Disney Plus?
Yeah. How did we get this back?
I don't know.
Sure, you got to get that.
Anything else? Yes. Oh, so Star Wars. Star Wars in 4K. Of course, the new controversy, because there's always controversy around Star Wars, is that it's yet another edit of Episode 4 of A New Hope, in that the famous Han Solo Greedo scene, they have revised that yet again.
Apparently Lucas did it.
It was apparently a stipulation before he would sell to Disney, is that the future whatever release of Star Wars would be a step back from Han shooting first, or Greedo shooting first. Wouldn't be Han shooting first, but now they shoot at the same time.
Simultaneously!
It's a tie!
Yay!
Morality is ambiguous!
That's horrible. You still got Han's head, like, moved to the side digitally. It looks absolutely stupid and takes you out of the movie entirely. Greedo should never have touched his blaster. He was clearly gonna shoot Han. I've been looking forward to this moment for a long time, right. He says, over my dead body, blah, blah, blah. We know that he's going to shoot Han. Han was acting in self-defense.
Yeah.
He shot Greedo first. End of story. That's the way it should be, and it will always be.
I will never understand this argument. I will never understand the argument. And like as if we change the order of operation, that changes anything about the character.
No, it does. It does not.
It's a digital like manipulation of the film.
I think there's I get the manipulation of the film is unnecessary.
Right. Okay. There are two arguments against this revision about the revision that was
stop
shown.
Stop messing with it.
Special edition is special edition, and that's a longer story. But one is the technical acumen of however they did the move. Right. It looks ugly.
Right.
The Han shifting, the pacing is off. Nothing of that really works from a cinematic standpoint. Second is the character point. And I think that's the point the Star Wars fans have a bigger issue with. The idea that when George Lucas revised it so that Greedo shoots first, it made Han less of a scoundrel. It put him more, it revised his backstory. Now,
no, it doesn't. I don't agree with that.
Why not?
Because, I understand the point they're trying to make,
mm-hmm.
but it's, like, the Star Wars universe is messy and ugly and,
Exactly, which is why a hero like Han Solo is justified in shooting first.
It was also fine if he doesn't shoot first.
But we're talking about where that scene is placed in the movie. For someone watching A New Hope for the first time, when you're going to show your kids A New Hope for the first time, you're introduced to the character of Han Solo. That is literally like a second or third scene he's in after he, you know, you get the swagger, you get all his boasting about outrunning the Imperials. And that is one of the things that is a character defining trait that for a new kid watching Star Wars, then gets a sense of the morality of the character. They're not going to have seen Solo or read the books or know where Han comes from and all that stuff. And I think that's important that you show Han shooting first, because it does show that this is a gray world. It's not just black and white.
But my point a moment ago was he was going to be shot by Greedo.
And that's the subtext, acting in self-defense.
Right. And that is there. And that's the point.
Yeah.
I think smart kids get that.
And so you don't, and it goes to the point that you don't need to show either Greedo shooting first,
yes,
or the.
Yeah, it doesn't matter because he was undoing his holster the whole time. He's okay. Going to shoot him.
Boy, I'm glad we discussed this because no one's ever bothered.
Hey, it's in 4K.
And then you got the whole Jabba scene afterwards, which is unfortunate.
Yeah.
Right? By the Falcon? All right. So that's too bad. It is special edition. So this was Disney's chance to come and do like one of the original cuts and put that up.
They'll never
there.
Do that.
I disagree. I think it's that one day they're going to want to make more money. And there it is.
There are other ways to make
an additional
make
$2. If you spend an additional $1 a month, Han shoots first.
How much is it worth it to you?
I love
it. That's a real Jabba move.
I love it. So you asked more on this. Yes, we mentioned that documentary. There's also, and you took the menu away, but there's an original series about Marvel kids.
Mm.
If you're a parent, do not watch it or you will cry your eyes out. It's quite good, but be careful.
Okay.
That's a good series. I look forward to seeing how that evolves. The Jeff Goldblum thing is just as weird as you expect it is. That's Jeff Goldblum, like, just riffing on the first episode is about sneakers. And yeah, you meet a lot of people in the sneaker world. I'm not sure I want to be a part of it.
So a lot of this goes to what makes these shows special. Like, would these shows have existed on Disney Channel?
Or Netflix?
On Netflix. And why is it that they are now kind of premium shows relegated to a subscription service and not on Freeform or Disney XD?
I don't know. I mean, it's all related to Disney products, Disney Marvel.
But so were those shows that were on the Disney Channel?
No, that's true. That's true. Yeah. So I haven't had cable in 12 years. So I don't have, I mean, I guess I could have used an app to get Disney Channel. Hmm. Is that true? I don't know. But
Yeah.
So all this new stuff, it definitely feels like you're on a Disney cruise where it's like all the content
Disney
is
all the time.
It's related to Disney. Yeah. But, you know.
I know I made fun of Nat Geo off the top. I did watch Free Solo again last night.
I still haven't watched that.
It's so good. And then if you haven't watched Science Fair before, excellent documentary. And so there's a good slate of documentaries. Like, you'll be missing the David Attenborough type stuff, but there's some really good content there. And most of it is the documentary stuff and not kind of the wonky shows that have been on Nat Geo.
Let's also talk about other complaints. Simpsons is in 16 by 9. This is
the
cable
cropping.
TV crop versions.
Is that new?
It's what it's being has been broadcast on FFX and the cable version. You lose it top and bottom.
Yeah. You lose visual gags.
Yeah.
So there's a point where they go to the Duff Brewery. Mm-hmm. And there's a gag. They show Duff, Duff Dry, and Duff Light. And it's all coming out of the same pipe. That's the joke.
Yeah.
You don't see it.
That's horrible. I mean,
when it's cropped this way.
I mean, it's a lot of, regardless of a gag, there's a lot of animation that's being cut off the screen.
So the question is whether they had the original, you know, 4:3 version in this quality that they just chose, made the decision, we want to dumb it down and give you the 16:9 so people don't see the black bars on the side. Or is it a question of like the technology isn't there for them to show the 4:3 and then click an option to full screen it and do the pan and scan
version?
It's not even true pan and scan. They're not even like actually going side
just
to side.
Just give us the uncropped.
Did the series officially switch over to 16:9 at some season?
When it went to HD. Yeah.
Which was when? Do you know?
Season 21.
Yeah, it's something like 8 or 9 years ago. Yeah.
Okay. All right. What? By the way, let's just say for argument's sake that I'd never watched The Simpsons. I now have a family. We might enjoy doing that together. What's a good season to jump in? And has it been consistently good?
Okay, so everyone in the family knows the characters, familiar with them. I would just go in with a Treehouse of Horror. Like, get your feet wet.
No,
get a toaster, try and travel.
2 to 14.
We like jumping in. Two?
Season 2 to season 14.
2 is too early. Go about 3.5,
you got to appreciate some of the where Santa's Little Helper comes from.
You got to start with like a Lisa on Ice. You got to get to like the Stonecutters. You got to get into some of those classics. That's like in a 3-4.
Three.
Give me a Cape Fear Sideshow Bob all day long.
All right.
Are you a Pirates of Penzance fan?
Season 3. And you're saying it kind of fizzles out or 10 seasons
after
later?
12.
Yeah. 12 to 14. 14, probably the last good season.
Okay.
I mean, technically, if we're being hardcore about it, 8 is the last good season. But
wow. Good info. Thank you.
They're all good. It's all worth watching. There's so much, so many episodes that I feel like there's missed opportunities for them to do custom playlists. So when Simpsons was on cable TV on FXX, they did a really good job of theming. Okay, you're not going to do a marathon of all the Simpsons, but here's a marathon of all the Krusty episodes. Here's a marathon of all the episodes where they go to alternate futures.
So they might do that.
Playlists like that, or letting, you know, people share playlists, or play a random episode of The Simpsons between seasons 2 and 10 button. Like, something like that would be really welcome and get you into the content and not just crippled by indecision playing Menu Hero for hours.
I want to apologize on behalf of the fans. The correct answer I should have given is Whacking Day. That's where you should start that episode.
What is that? What season is that?
Probably 5,
you
somewhere
don't
in there.
Oh, boy. All right.
Whacking Day.
All right. Pro tip. On Disney Plus, I wanted to see a chronological listing of Disney stuff, and it's in there. You just have to know where to find it. You have to go to search, and then there's a Disney Through the Years category, and that will take you to the chronological listing of all the Disney stuff. So
watch all the 30s cartoons.
Yeah, you can check. You just sort. It sorts everything in order of age.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Love it. Love it. Things are missing. The Walt Disney Animation shorts.
Yeah, I saw Steamboat Willie's on there, but we don't get the modern much stuff. Off, yeah,
yeah,
any of the modern
Paper
stuff.
Man, Feast.
Oh, you mean yeah, like the shorts?
Yeah. Yeah, the equivalent of the Pixar shorts, yeah. But for the Walt Disney Animation Studios.
Yeah,
is that coming or is it
must
just?
Be. It must be just an omission right there. So Disney Plus out there. Verizon Unlimited subscribers or Fios subscribers can get a free year. Just Verizon.com/Disney Plus. So
I'm pretty happy with doing the 3-year commitment, even though it's not everything I want it to be right now. But
you know,
the,
if you're a Verizon subscriber, you add extra year.
Yeah.
So 4 years for the price of 2, essentially.
Can we rely on you to have seen Mandalorian 1 and 2 next year?
Next week. I'm confident I can. Probably.
Oh,
yes. The answer is yes.
Right. Did you watch Watchmen episode 4 and not Mandalorian?
Yes, I did.
Priorities misplaced.
I'll bet if it was Picard, we wouldn't have this problem.
No, we probably wouldn't have this problem.
If he did that, I would be drinking a Chateau Picard in front of his face to rub it in.
All right. Let's get through pop culture a bit quickly because there's a lot of stuff talking about in tech. First of all, the fans have won. The voices were heard. Sonic the Hedgehog has been redesigned, and there is a new trailer to show off Sonic.
Oh, yeah.
This is the James Marsden, Jim Carrey as Dr. Robotnik live action Sonic film, kind of in the vein of Detective Pikachu. And of course, when the trailer first came out a couple months ago, fans online, I don't know, it's internet trolls, really voiced their opinions strongly against the design.
They weren't just trolls. I mean, it was pretty much the internet at large.
Yeah. I'm of two minds about this. Uh-huh. I think that I agree that the redesign is better.
Because you're a content producer. That's why you're of two minds.
But I also have empathy for creative vision and creative team.
That's what I'm saying.
And I don't necessarily, I think feedback is good. But the way it went about it, there was a little bit of toxicity in the way that people memeified and also just harassed the creative team. And I agree, it looks much better now.
Yeah,
probably wasn't their original vision. I don't know how much extra work or money they had to put in this, but they did it, and it does look better. I just don't think it sets a great precedent going forward that people, without having seen the full context of the movie and what they were going for, can force a production company to make a dramatic change.
You are a lone voice here, my friend.
I think this looks better from the trailer.
I get it,
but I think the precedent of when you've only seen 2 minutes of something.
You're taking a we'll never know perspective on this. As if like the original film might have been excellent.
Or they should.
No, it's more the bending to fan pressure.
Yeah.
And we've seen evidence of where that can get out of hand.
No question.
But this... I liked how they listened to the criticism of how Sonic's face looked, which was the number one, which was the problem.
It was the face, the proportions, mm-hmm. everything. It definitely looks a little more cartoony. Mm-hmm. I also think the CG for him looks worse.
Now?
Yeah.
Well,
the rendering really does not look as realistic or lifelike.
That's true. Yeah. But I think that's on purpose.
Not even like the art design, the actual, like mm-hmm. the way the fur and the lighting bounces off the fur. It looks a little bit.
I think we like that.
I mean,
okay.
Look. Are we talking this seriously about a Sonic movie? This is going to be bad, right? It's a Sonic the Hedgehog movie. How is this going to be good?
Why do you think it's going to be bad?
Gotta go fast.
Because it's a Sonic the Hedgehog movie. I don't know. Like, there's no there. And you can just see Jim Carrey overacting to the nines.
But
we
haven't had Jim Carrey in ages. Like, he's finally doing his shtick again. And that was always pretty funny. I wonder. I don't know. It's not something I'm racing out to the theater to see, unless my kids want to, and then in case I'll do it. But I'll watch it at home.
All right. I hope to be proven wrong, but we shouldn't have high expectations for this movie.
The thing is, I don't know if they've gotten the free publicity out of this change that is worth the amount they spent to make it.
No, but they probably will have better in terms of the box office results
Yeah.
Because more people would be willing to give it a chance.
Yes.
And that's what they care about.
Right. Yeah. Well, I don't know. It doesn't look all that bad. It looks like a fun little film. I'm glad that they made the changes. And they kept the teeth. Mm. That was interesting because that was one of the criticisms. Like, oh, Sonic doesn't have teeth. They kept the teeth, but they made it adorable.
Bigger teeth, more cartoony.
Bigger
teeth.
Eyes. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely bigger eyes.
Bigger head.
Right.
Different proportions.
Right.
Well done. And this is like the crowd was right. That's the fear is that, well, now we have an example of the crowd being right and all this positive praise now about the trailers.
I don't think the crowd was necessarily right. The crowd got what they wanted. If this crowd existed when they made the original Super Mario Brothers movie and they kind of changed Yoshi's look or something to make it more cartoony, it still wouldn't have been a great movie, but it would have been so different. I love the Mario Brothers movie for what it is now because it is such a weird, absurdist, surreal vision of that world that is not anything like what we know of Mario, but it exists on its own and doesn't compromise its vision. However, misguided it was.
That's not in the studio's best interest, though. That's totally not. That's in the cult fan base's interest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not a money thing.
No. Yeah. And it is all about the money. It's also all about the toys, and something we've been very excited about is the return of the Netflix docuseries, The Toys That Made Us. Season 3 is coming out, guess what? This Friday.
You know, I'll watch it, but I'm starting to feel like they've used up all my toys.
Well, tease me the toys that are coming out in Season 3.
I believe Power Rangers is one of them. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping that they dive into not only the American Power Rangers, but of course the source material for the Power Rangers. I think you're going to get a lot of, like with the first two seasons, the history of not just toys, but also those franchises and children's entertainment as we grew up with them. So, what is it, Power Rangers?
Yep, Power Rangers.
Mighty Morphin Power Rangers.
Yeah, there it goes.
Then we get some TMNT. I'm
very excited about that.
Yeah, the turtle van. That is a pretty good toy. It was. And then I think the two that I'm actually the most excited about because of the pop culture connection.
Right. This is about context. My Little Pony.
Oh, if they go brony.
They will.
They have to.
Yeah, they probably will.
I think that'll be really interesting. And the wrestling figures, which have made a massive comeback, I think can be really interesting also because of the sets they made, like all the WrestleMania sets and the ring and like all like kind of the flamboyant characters. And they have all those goofy ads with like Macho Man Randy Savage with like holding himself. And like, I think that will actually be a really fun episode.
I mean, it's all cultural archaeology and diving not only into the merchandising that moves the money of children's entertainment, but the idea of what is children's entertainment and the difference between children in the 80s and the 90s and the aughts and what gets kids excited about watching, like, what type of content and storytelling they like.
But I do think Jeremy's right. Like, we're nearing the end of this show because we're running out of toys.
I'm a child of the 80s, and this is getting deeper into the 80s and into the 90s. I never watched a single Power Rangers cartoon or a show. It wasn't even a cartoon. It was live action. But I know that Norm did, and I know that there are people out there that did, so I hope that this resonates with that generation.
Yeah, what could be next?
Did they ever do, like, a Nerf? I don't think so.
Yeah.
Even though that's not really a toy in the same vein.
I mean, they did Lego, so why wouldn't they do Nerf?
I'd love to see a Nerf.
Yeah. Super Soakers and Nerf, combine them. Yeah. Just like the action sports toy world. Totally. There's ripe fodder.
Laser tag.
Oh, yeah. The original laser tag. Yeah.
Rubik's Cube.
Yeah, dude.
Okay. We talked ourselves into season four.
What they really need to move into is video games, because that is a huge...
Well, that's its own separate than the games mine. That made us, not Absolutely. The toys that made us.
Fine. Yes.
Spinoff show.
Give me the games that made us.
I think they're doing that.
Great. Great. Because I suggested
like
it?
Maybe we just like manifested it into our universe. We've shifted realities into the one where the games that made us are in production. Something we all grew up with and definitely had the toys too were Ghostbusters. And we had a little bit of Ghostbusters news, hype. Dan Aykroyd talking about the new film, saying that it's going to have a lot of heart.
Yeah, there's not much to this other than he's read the script. And apparently he and Bill Murray are both in it to some extent. And that's all we know. He likes the film. He thinks that it carries the heart of the original two. through the years, and it maintains that spirit.
That's totally good. So
is,
currently,
is that the term you were looking for? I wasn't looking for heart. I was looking for more like comedy, like especially from Dan Aykroyd. The word I was looking for is it carries the laughter or absurdity or something. Wasn't looking for Dan Aykroyd. Didn't mention
heart. He called it beautiful and heartfelt. So I don't know.
I mean, those are good words about a movie.
Have you? You know, I'm a huge. I love Dan Aykroyd's films from the 80s, but have you seen him recently? He's a different kind of guy now. Like, I don't know if he's
selling his vodka.
The Joe Rogan interview.
No,
you watch that at all? Check it out. He's definitely turned conspiracy theorist into like a mainstream kind of thing.
What?
Yeah,
I had no idea.
Yeah.
All right. I have an interesting night ahead.
He's got a lot of interesting ideas.
So it's written directed by Jason Reitman, of course, son of Ivan Reitman. He also wrote and directed Up in the Air, Thank You for Smoking, directed Juno. So this, you know, definitely good chops as a director. It's something we're all looking forward to. I think
hugely.
I still really enjoy the last Ghostbusters film.
I don't think that takes away from it.
But they are of separate universes. It's just a shared name.
I never saw the one from a couple of years ago.
You should.
Is it good?
It's really enjoyable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. But that is from the same universe as the first two. No,
completely different.
Really?
It's a completely different universe. And there are cameos from all of the original surviving Ghostbusters in that one, but they don't play them the characters that you know.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it still doesn't hold a candle to the original, though.
Yeah.
Like, as long as you don't pretend like...
Well, I don't think two even held a candle.
I was going to say,
two is awful.
I want a radio call-in contest to attend to for free. And I got the soundtrack and some slime for free.
Nice. Mm. Ooze. Yeah.
Not slime. A Ray Parker Jr. soundtrack?
Did he do the second one?
I don't know. I thought so.
When the movie time came around, I forgot about it, and we were late. My mom drove us, and we were late, but I still got the slime in the soundtrack.
So you didn't have to see the movie. I didn't let you in. Wow.
They couldn't even give you like a high C Ecto Cooler six pack.
No.
A trailer that just dropped, something we're all looking forward to, is Pixar's next film. This is from Pete Docter, and it is called Soul. So we previously talked a little about this, the idea that it's about, much like Inside Out, it's kind of a metaphysical story about a protagonist and kind of with his soul.
I'll tell you exactly what it's about.
Oh, yeah.
It's about a jazz musician.
What? Oh, what the kids want. Tell me a movie that kids are going to love. It's about a jazz musician.
It's about the notes you don't hear, Jeremy, this film.
Hey, I like it. It's about a jazz musician who falls out of love with the music and finds himself, his soul falls out of his body. In the trailer, we see him falling into a manhole, and then his soul appears. So maybe that's why. Maybe he's in a coma. I don't know. But his soul comes out of his body, and it's up to his soul and the soul of a child, of a little girl, to find their way back.
The real friends were the real prize with the souls we met along the way.
I can tell you, just judging from this trailer, the artistry is, you can expect that from Pixar, but there are some character designs in here that are absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, I also think the music is going to be fantastic.
For sure.
In this movie. And honestly, we haven't had like a really musically centered Pixar film before.
That's true.
And so I think them going in this direction is pretty exciting. It may not be as much for the kids, but
all Pixar films have great music.
They're for everybody.
Giacchino's score and memorable.
They're all
themes.
Scored, but it doesn't get into the culture of music.
That's right. Mm.
And Coco, to some extent.
Oh, yeah. No, you're right.
And that is one of the films that they chose to say this is from the studio.
Who brought you?
Who brought
Coco.
You? Yeah, it was the last two Pete Docter films. It was Up and Inside Out and Coco.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, I mean, that tells you exactly the type of film.
Yeah,
I cry every time I hear that song. So, please give me
Remember Me.
Yeah,
it's ruined the internet for me. Every time I go to enter my password and there's a Remember Me box to check, I always hear that song every time.
Very good. Yeah,
but going back to Pete Docter's first movie, Monsters Inc., that it opened with a jazz song. And so I think he's probably a fan. This is probably, you know, comes directly from him.
Very good. Last couple things with streaming services. The Stargate streaming service. Yes, there was a Stargate streaming service is shutting down.
What is Stargate?
What?
Oh.
Stargate was a 1993
there were three series?
Film by Roland Emmerich.
Yeah, I know about the film.
And so based on that film, it was spun off to do a TV show called Stargate SG-1, which I believe mm-hmm. is a Showtime original show starring Richard Dean Anderson playing the role that Kurt Russell played.
Yeah.
And it was a continuation of the show. It became its own, had its own cult following, became a little more lighthearted in tone, almost akin to the Buffyverse and some Joss Whedon-style shows. But it was about traveling to other worlds and had a big mythology of where the gods of the human world came from, whether it was Norse gods or Egyptian gods. They were all aliens, spoilers. And then it spun off two spinoffs, not only SG-1, there was Stargate Atlantis, which was a big show, one of the first big roles for Jason Momoa. Carl,
what?
Yeah, wow. he played one of the aliens who he played the heavy on that show, the stoic heavy. And then Stargate Universe was a short-lived sci-fi channel show.
I didn't care for Universe, I have to say.
So Stargate Command, which was a subscription-based streaming service that gave you all access to the shows as well as some original content. They had an original show called Dialing Home and Recon.
What? There was a service just for Stargate stuff?
Just for Stargate stuff.
Even the movies?
You get the movies, TV shows,
oh my God.
Original content, comic books, and all the fan forums. That is going away, shutting down at the end of this year, December 31st. People get refunds, and the original content, a lot of that will live then on YouTube.
I mean, I could see it for Star Trek, but Stargate.
I mean, it's all about fandoms. It's all about, like,
yeah.
Buffyverse has a fandom. Mm-hmm. Doctor Who, imagine a Doctor Who streaming service. I bet a bunch of people, it doesn't need to be at the scale of Disney Plus and Apple TV Plus. It just needs to sustain itself and create enough content. But I was hoping that it would get kind of bought up or kind of, you know.
I mean, what's hard is for the consumer, just the constant fracturing.
Yeah. 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 Well, that's the a la carte model. We all want an a la carte, right? Turns out they put a lot of things on the cart, including a new series from the Russo brothers. It's a docu-series on the streaming service Quibi. Have you heard of this? Have you heard of Quibi? Quibi?
No.
It's from Jeffrey Katzenberg, the K in DreamWorks, SKG, you know, former Disney exec and founder of DreamWorks Animation. But it is a mobile subscription service for very short bits of content. So the whole idea is that you subscribe, you watch it on your mobile devices, and it's all short-form content.
Okay.
And the Russo brothers are making a docuseries about the rivalry between Marvel and DC.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's a big one.
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to, but is it like little bits?
So 10 minute or less is the Quibi model.
Okay.
10 minute videos
or less.
So they're
making YouTube videos.
Essentially. You pay $5 or $8 a month for. Yeah.
But this series will be several 10 minute bits,
yes,
right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. They're not just making one 10 minute story about Marvel vs. DC.
It's not
an ongoing thing.
The service doesn't launch till April of next year.
Would Tested excel at something like this? I feel maybe.
I think their model is more for millennials who want quick Snapchat like instant content, but also the content they're making generates a lot of discussion. So this is why something like Marvel vs. DC, which there's a lot of fan fervor for, and it's a very hot topic on other platforms, whether it's YouTube or other forums, they want people to engage with the content and then, you know, have their chat threads on their service as opposed to on Twitter or Facebook.
Oh, no. We'll have to see how this goes for Quibi.
Not a millennial, so well, I'm a millennial, but y'all know you guys.
No, I missed it by or 8 years.
Oh, not for you then. All right, before we move on to our next segment, I want to let you know that This Is Only a Test this week is also made possible by Netgear. Is your Wi-Fi feeling old? Does it buffer while streaming? Does connecting to new devices slow it down? Can it handle gaming, video calls, large file transfers all at once? It doesn't matter how fast your internet connection is if your Wi-Fi router is getting old and outdated. Well, with Orbi Wi-Fi 6 from Netgear, your Wi-Fi is going to feel new again. Wi-Fi 6 is the latest tech that allows for more devices to connect and stream simultaneously without impacting speed or reliability. The result delivers the fastest Wi-Fi for all your devices anywhere in your home. You can stream in HD, 4K, or even 8K without buffering and eliminate lag while gaming and connect more devices to your Wi-Fi than ever before. Orbi Wi-Fi 6 is like upgrading your Wi-Fi to first class. And if you're ready for the best Wi-Fi ever, you can get it now from Netgear and never worry about Wi-Fi again. Check out Orbi Wi-Fi 6 at your local Best Buy or at netgear.com/bestwifi. Again, that's netgear.com/bestwifi. All right, big hardware drop from Apple again. We had the AirPods Pro earlier, and now we have the new MacBook Pro 16. Boom.
I don't love them calling it a 16 when it's the same as the 15.
It's bigger screen. It's a 16-inch screen.
But it's not, they're like, they're making it sound like a totally, like, it's that much bigger. It's not that much bigger.
I was confused too.
So the confusion is that it is not a new line. It is a replacement for the MacBook Pro 15-inch.
Yeah, and they shrunk the bezel to make the screen bigger.
Physically,
it's the same size.
It's the same class, but it is a little thicker. It is a little bit heavier by a third of a pound. And I think dimensions are like a millimeter thicker and a little bit wider. So it is actually, it wouldn't fit in a perfect clamshell that you had for the MacBook Pro 15. But it is a replacement for the 15 with now a 16-inch screen. I don't think they could have got away with calling it the 15, though.
No, I mean, I understand. But I think for, like, if you're just looking at this as, like, a kind of not hardcore consumer, you'd be like, oh, they've made, like, a different model than the 15. And it's like, this is what the 15 was. Right. It's an iteration.
But the problem is the naming convention of 13 and 15. They shouldn't have it called MacBook Pro 13, MacBook Pro 15.
It just should be MacBook Pro.
MacBook Pro, and you buy the smaller one or the bigger one, much like you do on the MacBook Air, right? You buy the MacBook Air, and but that one's only one screen. But previously, two different screens. So it not only has a bigger screen, it also has a completely revamped keyboard. Gone are the butterfly switches. They are now back to scissor switches. Also returning is the escape key, and also the arrow buttons are now back to this inverted T, which a lot of people wanted.
Oh yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
I'm curious what the experience is going to be with the touch bar. No. Now that the escape key is back, I wonder if that, I think that's going to make a big difference for,
I mean,
how people feel about the touch bar.
Sure.
That was one of the big complaints.
You don't have to use it anymore. It's just there.
No, but I mean, you can focus the touch bar on what you want it to do. Yep. It's stuff like control volume,
Trace,
and like, brightening.
Trace loves it because he found, that third-party utility that makes it useful.
So it also, surprisingly, is launching at the same price. So previously, if yesterday you were at an Apple store looking for a MacBook Pro 15-inch, you could now get a MacBook Pro 16 for essentially the same price, and they've bumped up the base specs. Also kind of surprising for Apple. So starts off with, I believe, a 256 gigs of storage. Starting price is $2,400. So it is a very, very high-end laptop. And it is base model, $2,400. You get the Intel 9th gen. So it's exactly the same CPU as the MacBook Pro 15 that you could have bought yesterday. They haven't put in a whole new processor. It's 16 gigs of RAM. Oh, sorry. The base model is 512 gigabyte PCIe base SSD, which previously the base model had been 256. That's actually really good.
I mean
it's still expensive.
It's a $2,400 laptop. Let's hope it comes with 512.
So I feel bad for everyone who bought a MacBook Pro, I guess, 6 months
like,
ago.
A
couple days ago. Return that. Pay the restocking fee and get the new one. The upgraded model is same processor. Same processor class, but goes up to 8-core as opposed to 6-core. So for, what is it, $2,400? For $400 more, you get the 8-core Intel, and you also get same amount of RAM, but a faster GPU. So it's all AMD Radeon. You go from the 5300M to 5500M. Both have 4 gigs of video RAM. And and then you get 1 terabyte of solid state.
Do you buy some of the pitches they're making of this is powerful enough for video editors, for even game developers to be using the laptop?
I can't speak for game developers. I think for video editors, if you're using Final Cut, then yes, Premiere is mostly still single thread. And so it's going to be about the clock speed. And yeah, they do turbo boost up to 4.5 on the entry level and 4.8 gigahertz on the high end. But I think a lot of people are also waiting for the 10th gen Intel 45 watt H class CPUs.
I don't like the proportions of the keyboard on this larger one. That's what always holds me back. If they could find a way to put a numeric keypad in there, I'd be much more tempted to get it.
Yeah. So you want the keyboard off center?
I wouldn't mind that at all.
But that's not a very Apple way. Apple likes its symmetry.
Oh, really?
And you want a numpad on the far right like you would find on a Razer laptop or something.
I don't know.
You couldn't get away with that on 13-inch, but you think on 15-inch numpad.
Yep.
I think not enough people make use of numpads. I love a numpad. I love a good numpad.
I have a dedicated numpad on my
PC.
I don't think it's necessary on a laptop.
What? What makes a laptop any different from a PC?
I don't know. I don't find myself using it. Like, my main complaint is the keyboard on the MacBook Pro. And if they fix that feel.
Oh, you have a problem with the keyboard?
Yeah. You it's still butterfly switches.
Yeah.
So it's a very
my E double type. So
really,
It is upgradable up to 8 terabytes of storage. A maxed out model will be $6,000.
8 terabyte SSD,
8 terabyte SSD sweet. on your MacBook Pro, and they've increased the battery capacity up to the travel carry on limit of 100 watt-hour battery. So also big 6-speaker stereo system with Dolby Atmos. It's 3 microphone array. They call it studio quality, but the no face ID and the front facing camera apparently seems the same camera. So a lot of people aren't necessarily happy with that. Force touch trackpad as always, and Bluetooth 5.0. Up to 64 gigs of RAM if you want to max it out.
Okay. New laptop.
Not for you, but for creative professionals. You know, who make their money video editing and need to be on the go and don't want to buy that Mac Pro, this might be for them. Yeah, I'm in the market for potentially a new editing computer, a new mobile editing computer. I've been looking at...
And a PC.
That's a build.
Yeah,
that's
I think this year will be my PC build, and next year I'll look at a laptop.
You wait on a Surface Pro and try to get the ARM architecture and just wait for them to sort out some of the
x86? On the Surface side?
Yeah.
No. I'm not going to get served. I'm. The big question is: next year, is Apple going to move to ARM, or will they stick with Intel? Intel, I think the big jump in mobile processor won't be 10th gen; it'll probably be 11th gen for the mobile side in terms of efficiencies. But by then, we could also be talking about completely ARM on Mac OS.
I mean, but you can go ARM right now on the Surface Pro X. It's just buggy.
Yeah, I'm not happy with app compatibility there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I need something that has higher clock speed, good number of cores, a lot of RAM. Touchscreen is the big, probably the deciding factor.
I can't imagine Apple's going to give that to you for another...
On a Mac OS?
2 years?
That could be their big thing, right? Like, for ARM, like, if they move to ARM and they're like, battery life is going to be bonkers, I bet, for an ARM-based laptop from Apple. Compatibility won't be good at launch. It'll have essential apps, but it'll be not a lot of backward compatibility, which people are feeling now with 64-bit only on Catalina. But they'll say like, oh, now we had a touchscreen. And that will get people who are on the fence to move and adopt ARM.
Will there be a whole iOS layer where it will run every iOS app?
Mm. No.
Why not? It's touchscreen.
I don't know.
That would be killer.
No one's done it well. Android hasn't done it well. Putting Android apps, Microsoft hasn't done it well.
Yeah.
It's a different user form. Like the way people use it are completely different.
You can't rely on
the screen the same way.
Yeah, you can't rely on touch on an accelerometer.
Yeah. 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 I my gut says no.
Okay.
Speaking of 2 years out from now for Apple, the new report on the Apple AR glasses rumor. Remember recently we had the rumor that Apple is going to release their AR headset next year, which we're all very skeptical about. But now the new updated, this is apparently a leak from an internal presentation mm-hmm. is that Apple's AR headset would not come out until 2022, so over 2 years from now, mm-hmm. and that wouldn't be their AR glasses. The interesting thing is that we're talking about two different form factors, one which would be more an AR / VR style headset, bulkier, and then maybe in 2023, you'd have the more glasses-like form factor that you could wear socially acceptably outdoors.
Okay, we'll see about that. Yeah, they did describe the 2022 headset as being like a slimmed down Quest.
Right. So more headset-like, something that you could also do VR on, which might lead some credence to the rumor that Apple is tapping Valve perhaps to port Steam VR over.
And that would be a more reasonable time frame too, if that were the case.
Yeah, 2022. I can't imagine what the world looks like in 2 or 3 years in terms of technology.
Like, I hate following stories like this, but did you see the patent that they filed that's associated in the story? They they had a patent approved like a week ago that has the opacity layer of the glasses change. And
so it can go from AR to VR just by almost like instant tinting.
Yeah, and essentially it's like UV controlled in some way, which is not dissimilar to how like photochromic lenses work.
The sunglass option that costs $99.
Yeah, but that way you can like actually then change your experience.
But would the field of view be expanded? Probably not.
Well, this is just one patent, right? It's probably not giving you the full picture of everything.
No. What are they up to?
No one knows. I'm making money, printing money.
Yeah.
Taking your money.
But I like the idea of it being adjustable. It actually entertains some interesting things.
Yeah.
That it's not you have to use it in this one situation.
It's probably the hardest problem for them to solve out of any technology problem they currently have. I mean, they could abandon it completely like they seem to have with cars. You know, spending money on that project and putting people on that team to work on an Apple car. And it really felt like the technology wasn't ready or the market wasn't ready. And because Apple can't put something out and sell a million units, they need to put something out and sell tens of millions of
units. I think they're overly confident in how quickly they'll overcome some of the social barriers to this. I think everyone has underestimated that aspect of the work.
Google Glass proved that to be the case. And I think we've all made the assumption that the first Apple AR glasses would not be anything you'd wear outside the home. Like, you get around that problem by designing the killer apps to be on the couch, in the living room, at your office, tethered to something, maybe tethered to a MacBook, maybe tethered to your phone, but really for indoor use. And then slowly you creep up, just like AirPods did. You make it a fashion item, you make it desirable, and then it becomes socially acceptable, just like staring at your phone while walking the sidewalk.
I don't know if you sell tens of millions of units with that approach.
It could be a hobby. They could call it a hobby.
Could be a hobby.
Much like the Apple TV. Even, call it a hobby.
Even 3 years from now.
Yeah. Still call it a hobby. Okay, next story. Amazon. Hey, they're opening a full-size grocery store.
It's not a go.
In Los Angeles.
It's not a Whole Foods. It's a brand new thing. And do you know how big this will be?
So let's talk about what Amazon currently has. They own Whole Foods. Yep. Those exist as pretty big grocery stores. Whole Foods are as big as Targets, right?
No, dude.
No, they're not.
What are you talking about?
Small Targets. I'm thinking of like the Stone Town Target.
Small Targets. Okay.
Yeah, not Super Targets. Not multiple floor Super Targets.
I'm glad you clarified that for our audience.
Thank you.
That you meant
you.
The Stone Town.
The one I go to. Right. Yeah. It's very, my bias, location bias, geographical bias. Yeah. But, you know, they're big, big stores and full-blown grocery stores. And they also have The Go, which is their pop-up AI machine learning store where you go in, you can grab stuff and literally walk out. Without,
there's like no staff members. Like, you just go in, it knows, it has 1,000 cameras on the ceiling that track you and what you're taking off the shelf, and you pay for what you walk out of the store with.
That's right.
Now, presumably, like, I'd like to think that's what this grocery store will incorporate, will use, because that's the magic of the Go experience, and I think that's what people want from a shopping experience.
It changes the pain point of going grocery shopping. So what is this? Checkout.
Talking to people.
I think the lines.
Checkout lines.
Yes.
The lines.
This is a pain point.
So this store is rumored to be, although like people haven't nailed down the address specifically, but they think it might be in the former Toys R Us building.
In Woodland Hills, Los Angeles area, California.
So large.
So this will be stand alongside a Whole Foods, but be maybe a little less high end than a Whole Foods.
Yeah,
more,
I think
more
it'll be
your Trader Joe's, Lucky's, Safeway.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the only way this makes any sense.
Will there be a place for you to buy Echoes?
Oh, sure. There'll be vertical integration.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the ghost stores are very small.
Mm-hmm. They're more like 7-Eleven size.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right. Physical presence. Maybe in the back they'll have a distribution center for your Prime Now delivery.
Yeah. Honestly, I don't totally get it, because when you have so much infrastructure in Whole Foods, is it just easier to change the brand of Whole Foods to be more accessible?
Then you lose so much of what you bought when you bought Whole Foods.
Of it just being sort of inaccessible and expensive.
Well, it also
for your normal people, but for the people who want to pay that high end premium lettuce and orange slices that a millennial cut for you, maybe.
We also don't know what the requirements are for this system, you know, and Whole Foods may not be designed to be compatible with it. And I'm just speculating that they're going to use that.
Whole Foods brand is not conducive to cameras watching you necessarily.
It's not?
I don't think that's what they're going with, like the organic kind of earthy experience you get in that store.
Yeah.
Let's move on to video games. There's a video out on YouTube. How does the ESRB rate video games? Can someone explain this to me?
It's not just a video on YouTube, my friend. This is the latest NoClip.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they, for the first time ever, the ESRB has opened their doors to a documentary.
Yeah.
And Danny has shot what I think is a pretty balanced episode of NoClip. NoClip, if you don't know, we talked about it before. It's been around for a few years now. It's Patreon backed documentaries about the games industry.
Yeah, wonderful documentaries.
They're excellent. And it's like impeccably named. I can't get over how good NoClip is. It is the best name.
The branding sold you day one.
That's perfect.
You're going behind the walls.
Exactly.
You're going to the gray space.
And you got that double entendre with like film clips. It's just great. Anyway, this documentary series goes into the ESRB, the ratings board for the games industry. And what I took away from watching it is, one, first of all, I think they're doing, by and large, the best that they can, but they move a little slowly, and in more ways than one, it kind of reminds me of the DMV for the games industry.
Huh.
Like, the decor in the office is lots of blank white walls. It's a bunch of people who aren't terribly excited about just about to be there. You know, they've decorated their desks, but they're also, you know, very well dressed, and they present themselves. Well, maybe they're not all well dressed, but you get my drift. It feels like a slower pace of life inside the ESRB, and I think that they have not grappled with some recent issues surrounding loot boxes very well. But by and large, through the ages, they tend to do their best. They're just a little behind, and they have to catch up. It's worth watching because you get to see what the process is for rating a game, which I never knew. They don't even play them. They receive basically a document that describes all of the pertinent content in the game, and then also a 45-minute to maybe on the outside 4-hour video.
So it's on the developers and the publishers to submit
exactly
and get certified and potentially audited.
And the rating itself is done by who they call raters, who are completely anonymous, weren't allowed to film them, are never allowed to talk to the press. They spend a day watching this content, deliberating with themselves. There's a foreman. There's at least three of them for every game. The foreman produces the document that proposes the rating that goes to the rest of the management. The entire process takes about a week.
Wow. All right. And they go through a lot of games. There's so much.
Yeah, just about every game.
Yeah.
This is fascinating. I'm curious, how influential do you think the rating systems are now? I think when they initially came out, they had a lot more power.
Well, when people,
but they seem to be waning.
Right. When people are going to the brick and mortar stores and looking at box covers, it's like buying a comic book.
Yeah, parents would make choices.
Comics Code Authority, right? Does it matter if a game now is not rated by the ESRB? Or is it store policy in places like Steam and Epic Store to mandate that these games, they're not, right? People can put green light games out there and never go through this process and have incredible amounts of success.
At least at one point, if your game was not stocked at Walmart, you weren't going to be a success. Yeah. And Walmart insisted on certain ratings as well as having ratings.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it was, I think it was probably more of an issue. And now they've had to evolved to incorporate downloadable only content.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Not just like add-ons for store boxes, but
digital only,
actual digital only content. And then also, if some of those are successful, moving to a box version, they actually have to be re-rated. Even if the content doesn't change. Oh,
it seems all very archaic. It's kind of like the MPAA, and there's a wonderful documentary on the MPAA process for the movie world, and I see a lot of similarities here.
Yeah, apparently they started with the movie ratings, and then they changed them.
Of course.
But it's worth watching. I don't believe it's an evil establishment. They are affiliated with the ESA. It does seem kind of...
I don't think evil, but more outdated.
Well, I just mean like... It's a weird issue to have a ratings board that is a barrier to entry to being on store shelves,
right,
and have fees associated with that, and have them sort of, you're required to go through them by the industry. But they only exist because the government pushed for it. Like, the government wanted an independent or a ratings board to take a look at these games before they go on the shelves. And that's why it happened, mid-90s. 94, I think, was when they started. Hmm. Anyway, interesting documentary. I recommend checking it out.
Yeah, go subscribe to NoClip as well.
Yeah, for sure.
I wonder if this next game we're going to talk about is going to be rated. This is a new game from the folks behind Desert Bus, and it's called Airplane Mode. It's actually made by AMC. Yes, that AMC as an AMC channel. And
You get to go on a
flight simulator in the truest sense.
You get to go on a real-time middle seat experience on an airplane.
I believe it's window seat.
Is it a window?
I think it's window seat.
Oh.
Is this a game? I don't understand.
So, you know, much like Desert Bus is a game in the loosest sense and the spectrum of what defines a game, this is a simulator. This is an airplane passenger simulator where you take, like Kishore said, a real-time flight. And it's an exploration on the meditation on life between destinations.
Can I get this now?
No, 2020. you can add it to your Steam wish list.
Okay.
It's not going to be in VR, which I think is a massively missed opportunity.
Yeah. By the way, that's something the ESRB is not equipped to
rate.
Yeah, at all.
Totally.
If they're watching a video.
VR interactions. Absolutely. But it's called Airplane Mode. And you can interact with the entertainment console in front of you. AMC, IFC had made the in-flight safety video. You're on the coach.
You're not in first class.
Yep. There's in-air Wi-Fi.
There should be a premium version of the game that's first class.
Where you can upgrade to first class.
That'd be great.
First class simulator. That's going to be a DLC. Yeah. In-game purchase required.
Huh.
And a seatback entertainment system, crossword puzzles, and you could read the airline's travel magazine. Although it's not a very packed flight from the trailer that I see. It looks fairly empty, which is not the coach experience typically. Typically, it's very, very packed. And there'll be delays, turbulence, crying babies, all that type of wonderful stimuli. So maybe it's an endurance test, much like the Desert Bus is an endurance test.
Be great in VR.
I'd love to do this. In VR. Airplane Mode comes out in 2020. Great name as well.
This would be perfect for Oktoberfest in VR.
Totally. Totally. Yeah.
Oh, wow. You can look out the window. That's pretty cool.
Next story comes from NVIDIA. NVIDIA is experimenting with AI in all sorts of different ways. And one of their new experiments is it's an AI that tells you what your pet would look like if it was different species of dog.
What are you talking about? Mm-hmm. What do you mean an AI that does this?
It'll take a picture that you upload of an animal. It has to be sort of like face on.
Yeah.
I don't know how to say that with a pet, but essentially like you need a high quality shot of their face, and then it will apply some of the facial features, and it looks like it takes like the eye distance and applies them.
Try to get the personality of what makes your dog, the puppy eyes that you know so well. And apply it to a different breed of dog.
Or even a different species altogether.
Yes.
Yeah, a different animal altogether.
Human?
No. But like,
that's
you can
weird.
See
That'd
what
be
your,
weird.
You can see what your dog would
My
look
feelings,
like.
My feelings, I'm so conflicted.
You can see what your dog would look like as a cat.
Okay. Does it have to be a dog that you start with?
No.
Oh,
I think you can start with a cat.
Okay.
And see what it looked like as a dog.
I don't have access to a dog. I do have access to a cat.
Now you can imagine. You could show your family, hey, if Snowball here was a dog, look how cute she would be. Let's get a dog.
All right. And is this a, you just go to a website?
I think they're presenting this in a paper at a imaging, computer vision conference.
Oh, so I can't do it.
Yeah, you can't do it. Yeah.
Well, oh, you can. They have an AI playground area that you can test it out.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
They previously did a similar tool that took a crude like children's sketch and turned into a photorealistic image.
Huh.
So a child's drawing of a waterfall, it would use computer vision to recognize that it's supposed to be a waterfall with these features, this height of mountain, and then graft in photo elements from a library, a database of imagery, and then make it look photorealistic.
We're going to get the Oldify apps now for pets and all sorts of fun stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Other computer vision experiments were also presented at this past week's Adobe Max conference. They always do fun kind of computer vision and computational photography demos that some may or may not become real products. But this latest tool is basically a smart lasso that they called as part of their Sneaks problem or Sneaks project. And it can you basically tap a figure and then it automatically selects the entire image based the person, knowing that that is a person and these are their body parts.
So not just based by color and
or edge detection.
Shape. Yeah,
exactly.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah,
that's a huge time saving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's a whole listing of these. They've done this thing called the Project About Face, where it's a face aware tool that that then kind of changes your face. Project Sweet Talk, what is it? Animated videos out of static drawings. So a lot of like in the similar veins, taking databases and using AI to take things that you intend and then kind of infer what you want to do with it and change it up. Google, we talked about how they, with the announcement of the Pixel 4, they retired Daydream and all their kind of public VR efforts. Well, one good news come out of that is Google Cardboard, which was at one point one of the most widespread kind of VR light, you know, user accessible display tool, is now going open source. So Google Cardboard, anyone can take the information they've learned, the research from in terms of lensing, in terms of how they've made apps and physical designs, and do whatever they want with it. Make
it
a product if they want.
Bad for VR, and it should just go away.
No, I think releasing as open source is totally appropriate.
It's good for...
I mean, it is the... It
180
is the
video.
Realistic way to make something essentially go away. But
Norman, putting somebody in 180 video...
Yes?
...is exactly the opposite of what we should be doing for people to show them what the possibilities for VR are.
It's all a step up to that. Labo is essentially a fancy Google Cardboard, and I think it's good. It's good for VR. It's immersion.
It gives people the sense that VR causes motion sickness all the time.
These things should not be mutually exclusive. One, you should absolutely put people in, you know, in real VR six-off headsets.
Yes.
But I think if you, the only option, if you're traveling and you don't have your Quest with you, and you have, you know, a Google Cardboard equivalent and you have good VR video, I think it's really compelling and it may get people interested as long as you take the next step to... Yeah. To show them also the six-off stuff.
I think it's dangerous in these early days, because if it's somebody's first impression. Now, for you or me or people who are familiar with VR, we know what the limitations are. We expect them and we understand them. And someday everybody will. And you're right. In the long run, fine.
I think it's also naming. Don't call it VR. You can call it stereo.
Okay.
Call it a ViewMaster. Last bit of tech news. Let's go to we don't need to go to Elon's shower, but let's talk about Tesla, the long-awaited Tesla pickup truck, which no one knows what it looks like.
Was it released?
No.
They're announcing it.
They're showing it, unveiled, the Cybertruck on November 21st.
Well, first, RIP, they're not calling it Truckla. but second, he's really like leaning into this like cyberpunk aesthetic. He even tweeted out a link to the opening credits of Blade Runner underneath the announcement of the event happening on November 21st. I mean, it's kind of a nod that they're doing the announcement in LA and it's November 2019. So that's all the Blade Runner stuff there. Are you excited about?
I'm definitely curious.
I'm curious.
It's not a car for me.
Oh, I think this is an like in terms of like the game changer, this could be the game changer because you get so much more torque and power.
But it's not going to be a game changer if people who currently spend buy, you know, Ford F-150s aren't interested. And at the same time, yeah. Ford is going to show their SUV at the Los Angeles Auto Show. So
all electric?
All electric. It's first mass market. Basically.
No, I'm just saying like the electric truck where you're looking for power and torque, that's things electric can it's deliver on,
sure,
it, right?
Sure. But it's not about the capability. It's about the social acceptance. I don't know anyone who is in the market for an F-150 who would be enticed by Tesla Cybertruck.
I think that's a generalization.
How many people
that
do you
isn't
know
true
in the market for an F-150?
Mostly extended family.
Isn't
contractors
that one,
and Midwesterners.
Isn't it one of the most best-selling vehicles in the country?
It is, I believe 100%.
And so I think if you demonstrate it has the power, it can haul, it can do everything that the gas-powered truck will, I don't know I buy this social acceptance is going to be as big of a barrier. I think the price will be, but that's different.
Norm's absolutely right that there's going to be a social
resistance
to it.
Yeah, but there's social resistance on the Tesla.
Since it is such an important, popular vehicle, I think there's going to be a percentage. 2, 3, 4, 5% of people who say, I'll buy in on that, and they'll get it, and all of their truck buddies are going to see what it can do and see how sexy it is.
It's going to key their car and laugh at them when they can't charge it to the battery and go, go to gas stations.
No, I don't agree with that. I think like Ford F-150 isn't a cheap car, by the way. It's like, you know, 20, 30, 40 grand. This is going to be 60, 70, something like that. But I think I'm really curious because I those cars get like 10 miles a gallon.
Yeah.
And so
if it's money saved but I don't think the infrastructure, the network is there for people who use those on a regular basis.
I think if you're a contractor and you're working in a city.
Well, you definitely have easy access to set up your own charging station.
And then how much are you actually driving? Are you driving more than 100 miles, 200 miles?
Yeah.
Probably not. You just have to haul a bunch of crap. So it has to demonstrate all of that. I'm very curious about this.
Definitely curious. I'm not so optimistic about the marketplace for it, demand for it. Other Tesla news, there's a big software update for now. They do one-pedal driving, hold driving mode, they call it. So when you let go of the accelerator, you go to a full stop and park, essentially. So for stop signs.
Did that with software?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
That's like my car now.
Yep. One-pedal driving. And also a 5% power increase.
I love that mode. That's how I drive in the city all the time.
Does it work uphills?
Well, I have, of course it works uphills. Like I can come to a complete stop going uphill.
But then
going
it's applying a force when you're going uphill. It needs to recognize the angle you're at and the resistance because it needs to slow down appropriately.
It's what they call hill assist. I think it actually engages the brakes. Mm. If you come to a stop and then let go of the accelerator, it will... Or brake, it will just keep the brake on.
Yeah,
going downhills though, it will not stop your car. You'll continue to coast. At least in the case of the Bolt, so you have to use the brake then. But that's one of the modes that regenerative braking that retains your brake pads. I mean, brake pads on EVs you don't have to replace those hardly forever.
Yeah, and you get a little bit of power back.
Yeah,
which is useful.
Exactly.
For regenerative braking.
Yeah, I'll go to a Safeway that's up the hill from my house.
Yeah.
When I arrive home, I'll have more range than when I left Safeway because of the regen braking.
But you used up that range
exactly.
when you get
but
up the hill.
Going downhill all the way home gives me more range by the time I get home than when I left Safeway.
That's not... What?
I'm not kidding.
No.
Yes.
That doesn't make sense.
Why not?
Because you use that power going uphill.
I regenerated so much power
but
getting home.
But you don't regenerate as... That's not how physics works. The amount of energy you expend getting your car up that hill.
No, not when I left home, when I left Safeway.
Oh, got it. Okay, yes.
Yeah.
I was like, no, you don't come home with more power just by going to Safeway up and down the hill. But yes, coming down the hill, you would end up.
That's
not how physics works. Thermodynamics, Jeremy. It's a law.
I mean, that's a Simpsons episode you should watch. In this house, Lisa, we obey the second law of thermodynamics.
Who says that?
That's a Homer Simpson line. Classic Homer Simpson line.
All right.
All right, before we move on to our next segment, I want to let you know that This Is Only a Test is also made possible this week with generous support from Lutron's Caseta Smart Lighting. A lot of people think you need smart bulbs to get smart lighting, but there's a smarter way. Caseta's smart dimmers and switches replace the switch in your wall so that all the lights controlled by that switch will act smart. Think about all the places in your home where one switch controls multiple light bulbs, ceiling lights, chandeliers, bathrooms, and more. With Caseta, you'll save money by replacing the switches instead of replacing all those bulbs. Smart bulbs are only smart when the switch is on. If someone switches it off, which is what you tend to do, you can say goodbye to the smart control and connectivity. But Caseta switches are always smart, even if the switch is off. With Caseta dimmers, you don't need to buy smart bulbs to enjoy smart lighting. You actually get the best of both worlds, smart lighting control from an app or your voice, and control right at the switch. It's something we use right now in our nursery. So when I'm feeding the baby at night, I can just use my voice, dim the lights, and put him to bed without having to touch the switch. Get smart lighting the smart way with Caseta by Lutron Smart Switches. Learn more about Caseta at lutron.com/test. Again, that's lutron.com/test.
The VR Minute, virtual reality this week.
So much to say.
So much to say. Well, last week we didn't get a chance to talk about Pistol Whip and your thoughts on it, Jeremy.
Right. You'd played it. I hadn't. Have you played it?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a good game. I think it was a little overhyped for my taste. It, you know, game of show for most C6 kind of talk. And I have a problem. I think I have a problem that I've discovered with rhythm action games that are shooting based, where I'm not physically hitting something or pressing a button as when how you described it, there being a finish line, as something crosses this thing where there's a clear, you know, moment when I'm supposed to activate a switch.
You want to be technical about it.
Yes. So what I found from talking to Will actually at your son's birthday party is I think I'm being too anal about it. Like he is enjoying the game a lot and he doesn't even care about the score. He's just trying to get through the levels, mm-hmm. you know, as a shooting game.
I do that as well. I try to get through the levels because it's not easy. It's hard to get through the levels. But I also try to groove with the beat a little bit how I feel like it.
Right.
I'm enjoying the music with the beat. And it may not be the perfect, I might not get so. There's plenty of times where I feel like it's a good feeling for me to, you know, use this moment to and this beat drop to shoot this group of enemies. And I might get like very low score, but I'm okay with it.
That's a weird situation to be in.
I think the music hasn't hit me as much as the music for Beat Saber has, as like enjoyable, like willingness to listen. It's more intense than Beat Saber. So I wish they like dialed down the difficulty a little bit, where you can still like tap into harder modes, because I've been getting frustrated not completing levels. And that makes me not want to keep playing. And so if I'm treating it like Beat Saber basically lets me finish like all the levels for the most part. I get a good amount of gameplay. I'm getting less in this. And because it's more intense, I'm playing for a less amount of time.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of the songs. I know that that's a subjective thing, but yeah. I do get into some electronic music. I mean, mm-hmm. Beat Saber, pretty much across the board, I find enjoyable. So yeah, I wish that there was not even necessarily different genres in Pistol Whip. I just wish that the songs were a little more interesting. I mean, all that said, though, I've only played it on Quest. I think they pulled off a pretty decent trick, making such a good looking game and an enjoyable, you know, play experience on Quest. It's a game I'd recommend. It's just not the next Beat Saber.
I think it's understated how important the mechanic of you just going at a constant speed through there is. I mean, I know you made a big deal of it in the video and everyone's talking about it. I think there's room for a lot of games to use that mechanic just because of how comfortable it was.
Yeah. I mean, even we've talked about it, maybe not you going through the world, but the world coming at you.
Same diff.
Though. You're on a platform, exactly, where the floor is moving or not moving, but I've always wanted this type of kind of shooting gallery, like Contra style, where you're in a hallway and, you know, enemies are coming at you, or the room is, you're on a platform moving through. I'm having a lot of fun with it. I think it's amazing on the index at under 44 hertz. and the wider field of view and the sound system especially. People have already kind of hacked their way into replacing the songs
but
in the
just
game.
The songs.
Just the songs. And of course, the enemies don't match up. So you have to find basically songs that match the length and beat.
Right.
The rhythm, the BPM. But if you do find, and I don't know if there's a, there, I don't think there's a database out there.
But then again, if you're playing like Will and you don't care about the score necessarily, or hitting the beat.
Yeah,
maybe.
Oh, you can't have songs that miss the beat though.
You need
in the, you have some it has type to of, hit at yeah. the right point.
Right,
it's not just the beat that they're or that they're.
I think it's still fun
choreographed
even,
to.
Right, it would still be fun to play, like if you muted it and put your own soundtrack on.
Yeah,
and enjoy whatever you know the Matrix soundtrack and play level of Pistol Whip. That I still find fun. I would love that to be an option. You know, short of. A whole new custom UGC platform.
I finally booted up Synth Riders on the Quest, which came out a couple weeks ago, and just because I wanted to sort of compare a couple rhythm action games. And I liked it a lot more than I did when it came out on PC. And I don't know if that's because I had just played Pistol Whip, and I was looking for... I think the music in Synth Riders is more to my taste.
Other big game out this week, and we can talk about it now. A review will go up hopefully tomorrow, is Stormland.
That's right.
Insomniac's Stormland. Oh, boy. What do we want to say about this?
Well, it's... I guess we should describe the game in a sentence or two. You know, it's funny, because whenever we would interview the developers and I would say, so it's a roguelike, they would hedge a little bit, but it's a roguelike.
It's a roguelike. Light.
Yeah. You basically are, it's a sci-fi futuristic space. You are on a planet. You're a robot. Everyone around you is a robot. The humans have vanished, and you ascend to a cloud realm, and there are islands on this cloud realm, and you can sort of surf on the cloud between the islands.
Kind so
of.
That's how it makes it open world.
Yeah. And the islands are randomly placed, and the chosen from, I think, pre-designed islands, probably, that randomly placed around on a grid system. And then you have various objectives. You have to go from island to island looking for beacons or keys, and eventually you can destroy the big tower at the end of the
big
level.
Citadel, yeah.
And then you progress to the next tier of islands, and the enemies get harder and harder. The whole time you're fighting bad robots. You're a good robot, and you're fighting the bad robots. And it has a massive upgrade system, lots of weapons, lots of different arms. You are kind of, you can rip off your left arm and replace it with a different type of arm that does a special thing. The locomotion is, it's probably, I would say, the most interesting. I wouldn't even say intense, because I never felt any sense of nausea, but it is a lot of fun. Why is that
coming through?
How is that happening?
I don't know.
It's like I would have said, like Lone Echo Arena would have been the most interesting locomotion until this game, but this is almost like that plus gravity.
So
it's a lot of fun.
Right, is gravity. Lone Echo is interior, where you're climbing and grappling while you're. This is pure exterior.
Yeah.
There are like some buildings you go inside in, but you're really moving and grabbing every rock. Hill, tree, structure in the world to vault yourself throughout.
It's a Breath of the Wild approach to climbable worlds. It's you can climb everything. And that's one of the things you can upgrade. You can make yourself fling more powerfully while you're climbing. You can make yourself jump higher. You can do all these different things. And so you can approach these combat situations from many different vantage points. You can try to sneak around and come out from above. You can fly, because you can also do that. You coast through the air down onto the clouds and from a large platform down into a smaller one. And it's a fun game that's, I would say, relatively small in the scope of the loop, of the gameplay loop. Like you are.
That was the thing that was surprising to me. It seems like Insomniac put a ton of resources in building the systems in place, from amazing animation and weapon systems to locomotion in both surfing on the clouds and climbing the world. And they even talked about publicly how the original gameplay designs, very clear, you can see not everything was supposed to be climbable.
Yeah.
There are certain you would have to, you know, vault yourself via the clouds to get to a higher place. And part of it would be the challenge of discovering how to get to the highest point of this island and how to walk around, and then find these panels that you could, like Portal, the color coded panels that you could actually grapple and climb. And then they decided, hey, let's just let people climb everywhere. And it's very freeing, but in the same vein, it makes it a lot easier. And so I didn't find it particularly challenging. And while the systems are incredibly polished, the character animations are beautiful. The character design, the graphic fidelity is, I think, one of the most beautiful VR games. Definitely a ton of so much production value. It seems like they built this to be more of a roguelike. And so the narrative was much shorter than I anticipated. We finished the main single player story, which almost is just like an expanded tutorial.
That's exactly what it is, yeah.
In about 2.5 hours, maybe 3 hours.
Maybe, yeah.
And then you go into the first gameplay loop, which loops every week, and that took maybe about 3 hours to get through.
More than that.
Because you played some, and I jumped in the middle of your game.
So there's 4 tiers to the outside world, and then I think there's the 5th, which is like the boss level, and you have to progress from one to the next. And another player can join your game. And I think that multiplayer capability is one of the hugest selling points of this game.
Yeah.
Playing with somebody else, particularly somebody you know, is just automatically takes it to another level. And it's very well done. There's a couple bugs.
A lot of bugs.
At least in the beta, one of the players would always sort of be in a T-pose.
Yeah, the animations wouldn't lock in right.
But that seems like a solvable problem.
Hopefully.
I'm sure they'll fix that. But just whoever joins, they join the other player at the point in the game that they are. And mm-hmm. so you can, you know, progress. And if you
share objectives, share resources. The enemies, well, at some points could get challenging, and I died plenty of times.
I think you died more falling into the cloud.
Sure, yes, than I did in shootouts.
Yeah.
I never felt that type of tactical precision required.
We need to think this through first.
Exactly. I never felt like we had to think any encounter through. We were just going to jump in and go guns blazing and
even
win every time.
At the final levels, the boss levels.
Yeah.
And that may have been because we were playing co-op. Maybe they don't amp up the difficulty more, or at least enough.
Or it could be level design. And it could be the fact that they designed it that you can grapple anywhere. Because the fact that you could go and I don't think they could have designed enemy encounters to be more open than they were. Like it's very clear in some places where enemies were designed to go to funnel through a focus point where you would be encountering them through maybe one or two entrances. But the fact that you can jump in behind them or underneath them or come in from any angle.
As long as you're well enough equipped.
Yeah, as long as you have the ammo, it just made it not that difficult.
Yeah, there were definitely times when I would run out of ammo and I would rely on you to solve a problem and vice versa. So that I think there were moments that were close to that. And after you go through a full level and you beat the end, and there's not really a boss. It's more of just like you destroy the tower.
Mm-hmm.
It restarts, and there's a thing on your home base that says like escalation level.
Yeah, new game plus.
That was always 0. So I feel like it's possible that if we play it more, then that will escalate and it would get harder. I just wish it was harder already.
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't this a good sign, though? Like when you rewind to Road to Nowhere, Edge of Nowhere, where it was almost all narrative and not that many mechanics. And the narrative in that game was very good. It was very scary. And now you're seeing like an iteration in mechanics. Do you think like Insomniac's just going to put it all together in one of their upcoming titles?
I would say that would be excusable if we didn't live in a Asgard's Wrath world where you have both mechanics and a 40-50 hour campaign with incredible amount of scripting and story content. And I didn't expect a 50-hour campaign here. I expected a, you know, maybe 10-hour campaign, and didn't get that.
Yeah. I would say graphically it's second to Asgard's Wrath as well. Like that's probably the only game that clearly just looks better to me.
Oh, my opinion, Stormman looks better.
Great.
Maybe because of the animations. The animations I love.
Stormland looks good. I just think there's a lot more variety in Asgard's Wrath because you're going to these different realms and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But Asgard's Wrath, just from a pure brute force development, like asset standpoint, there's so much more to the character development and the you know, textures and geometry and all this stuff that you get for your dollar. But it doesn't have multiplayer, and that is a huge, huge benefit of Stormland.
Huge, huge. But I think they...
It's also a time commitment. Like, Asgard's Wrath, you jump in there, and you have to sit through the exposition.
Yeah.
Whereas with Stormland, you can jump in there by yourself and just, you know, go through a couple islands and then jump back out. And that gameplay, that loop of combat and upgrading your systems, that's addictive. Like, I enjoyed that. And you can also take your time, which... I suppose that's true of most games, but Stormland in particular, you're doing so much resource collection. You're going around picking fruit, and you're finding you know, rocks to destroy crates to explode. You can just take your time doing that, and traversing the world is just enjoyable and relaxing in and of itself.
And the roguelike aspect really comes into play when you have different facets of your chassis and leveling up to explore. So you can play 1 week.
Yeah.
You can go full on traversal upgrades and go crazy amounts of locomotion to a point where it's like what was that other that
Jet Island?
Jet Island. Right, we got that feel from it. Or you can go guns blazing and go nothing but enemy encounters and shields and weapon upgrades. Yeah. And so week to week, you can play it differently. We've only been able to play it for 1 week, so we're going to dive in hopefully tonight and do a little bit of the reset world to see exactly how it has changed. The seed that gets sent out to all the players is the same week to week, so all the players will have experience a new version of the game in the
together.
Same way, together in the same way.
Yeah, and to your point, Kishore, about the story and whether or not Insomniac will incorporate more or explain more. There's a lot of mystery in this game, I think, on purpose. There's clearly the humans have gone somewhere, and there's remnants of them, really beautiful ones, you know, big structures that you'll happen upon. If you scan them, you kind of get bonus points for that. And it's that ambiguity or mystery that pervades this whole experience for me that I actually like. I couldn't... There's a lot of points in the game where I wasn't sure if I was supposed to understand what was going on or not.
Mm.
I feel almost like I have amnesia and I've been dropped in this other world. And it's very strange. You know, you're surfing on clouds and there's these robots who have very human characteristics. And if it has this kind of like a... Do you remember the game like Out of This World?
Or, yeah.
It feels like that kind of thing where it's just like a living, breathing space that isn't fully explained. Mm. And... I kind of like that. I liked it because it feels realized, even if it's not spoon-fed to you.
I think it was interesting the way they design these islands to be dropped in. You know, there's some amount of crafting with the infrastructure on those islands, the different type of environments, the foliage, the buildings themselves are a place that you uncover, and the fact that they are placed. I feel like there could have been a higher density of islands. The storm... writing itself, I felt like served a purpose, but I never found it super enjoyable.
Yeah, it's kind of a Wind Waker experience where sometimes I just want to get to the island.
Yeah,
but at the same time, you can upgrade your systems to allow you to do that more quickly.
Yeah,
and
you,
if you have a buddy you're playing with, you can warp to them.
And that's what I would do. I was like, okay,
you go.
I'm falling into the cloud hole too many times. You go there, and I'll warp to you, and we'll fight these guys. And we never. I mean, this may be depending on difficulty. If we do get those escalation levels and have more difficult enemy encounters, but it never even felt as fun as like the Rec Room quests where we would have to stop and talk about the way we'd approach each encounter.
Yeah.
Like we never felt like that. And that, I think that is so important to a multiplayer cooperative single player, you know, and narrative game.
Typical of roguelikes. Like you usually can't finish them.
Yeah.
Until you, on roguelites especially, until you die several times and upgrade your systems.
Yeah. So could be harder.
Yes. Yes, that's the takeaway.
Make it harder. Make it more challenging.
You don't hear that too often in reviews.
So that's Stormland. It is out, I believe, today, 13th. Yeah.
Yep.
It's about time. By the time you listen to this, it'll be out and we'll be showing footage and talking more in depth in a later episode. A bunch of other VR updates. Angry Birds VR. Sure.
Well, it's just an update that's going to allow for a level generator or a level
creation.
Level creation, user level creation. So you'll be able to design your own puzzles.
Perfect for kids.
Yeah.
Right. Get more content. And people love shooting those birds at those blocks and the physics. It's a physics game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's perfect for that kind of thing.
Virtual desktop got a new update.
Finally, it came out of beta. Like this is if you played the virtual desktop Steam VR compatibility thing that hit, what, 6 months ago, and then was immediately taken off the store, and then you had to sideload it, it's still the case. But if you tried it back then, as I did, and thought, well, this is a nice, this is actually a remarkable achievement, still too much latency, the visual quality isn't there, try it now. Because I'm really impressed. I mean, this, they're in the guy who made the app has incorporated foveated rendering.
Yep.
And another technology. I forget what it is. Is it sliced rendering? In any case, he's incorporated new technologies, and it improves the latency and the visual quality tremendously. It's great. I mean, it really is fantastic. You should try it. He says it's about 41 milliseconds of lag wirelessly if you're playing SteamVR games to your Quest.
On a 5G.
Best case scenario. Yeah. Your PC is Ethernet, gigabit to a router, 5G to your Quest. Mm-hmm. That is 3 frames. That's not bad. I mean, that's wireless. It's not going to be link level latency, but I think it's reached the point where fewer people will experience any kind of motion effects. Mm. Try it out.
All right. Cool. Also, we got a trailer and release date for Boneworks. This is the upcoming game from Stress Level Zero, the folks who did the Duck Hunting game, and also Hover Junkers. This is kind of their physics-based single-player shooter in the vein of almost Half-Life and Half-Life 2. Yeah. Actually, even the graphics look good. It has a lot of a Half-Life 1 feel to it.
They're friends with the Steam guys.
Yeah, so, yeah.
There's definitely some influence there.
Right. You're in Aperture Labs inspired in that you're going through this kind of warehouse facility and discovering, you know, finding the tools and fighting this invasion.
Everything's a physics object.
Yes. Yeah. So excited to play that December 10th. Yeah. So just in a month's time. And then also Echo Combat
postponed.
Quest postponed until 2020.
Which is funny. I don't know if you noticed, but they just launched their advertising campaign for it.
Oh, I saw basketball game, like a mixed reality campaign for Oculus where people are in Echo Arena and then they're in Quest headsets. Until next year.
It's part of the reality.
Yeah, Defy Reality campaign.
So that's unfortunate because I'm sure they would have loved to synced up with that ad. But obviously the right choice. Get it right.
Yeah. Yes.
What is Miyamoto said, like a bad game released is always bad. You know, a delayed game is potentially good.
It's a very pessimistic look on game development.
I wanted to add one more thing about virtual desktop because I didn't realize this. One of the options in there is to enable cloud services. So it works from cloud services. And there are people doing this. It's a very small number of people and it's not ideal, but it's possible. You can get a cloud PC.
Pay Amazon or pay one of the, you know, Azure to have a slice that you run off of.
Exactly. Or there's like easier turnkey things like Shadow PC. You sign up and you get a Windows PC in the cloud and you can access it through your phone or a Chromebook or whatever you have. You can install whatever you want on that. It's your PC. You install Steam VR, you install Virtual Desktop Streamer and Oculus, and then you can play games.
Stream it from the cloud.
VR from the cloud.
Oh, how's that latency?
To your Quest. You can have your own desktop there. You can use your desktop for productivity. I mean, this is the future. This is what people are doing now that is just very tip of the iceberg, cloud-based existence.
Hey, that would make a headset very light.
What?
If you didn't need to have the compute in there.
Oh, if it was truly just the terminal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you could still do the hand tracking.
Wi-Fi
and render that locally.
Yeah.
And have that not be laggy and then run everything else on the cloud.
Yeah.
I don't know if latency is going to make that possible. I'm sure Oculus is looking at
it. The resolution doesn't make it practical either, but I'm saying, as we get better and better and better,
compression,
I wouldn't be surprised
bandwidth.
If one day I don't own a PC, you know, and I'm the last person
Don't say that, Jeremy.
I know. I don't think I will not be a Stadia customer. I'm not a streaming person. I like local processing, but that I see people doing this, and it's so much less expensive.
How are you going to warm your room up?
I would
cold in the winter.
I wouldn't be surprised, given like gigabit connections, if things continue to evolve. If one day we're just there,
and I don't want to see compression.
Yeah,
I never want to see compression.
You should try this new streamer. It's I don't see any compression, and it's really.
And you
good.
Played like a Tetris effect on.
I did. On yeah, which is super noisy.
Yeah. All right. I think that does it for VR news and the podcast this week. I promise to watch Mandalorian, mm-hmm. the two episodes next week, as we'll be able to talk about that. And what else is new on the site?
If you're in town Saturday, we're doing the last Starfighter screening with Gary at the Alamo Draft House in San Francisco. On Monday, we're doing Close Encounters, which there was a Offworld episode about
that's right.
recently.
It's very fun. Bom, 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 bom.
And then a week later, we're doing it on Ford versus Ferrari, the new movie on the 24 Hours of Le Mans.
Ooh. You're doing a whole science series on that? I mean, a science night?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Wow. I haven't seen the movie yet, but I think we'll figure it out.
We have a one-day build with Adam on the site, hopefully by the time you listen to this, if not later in the day, and it is potentially VR-related, is all I'll say. There's also a wonderful conversation in studio visit we did with a pop-up book designer who...
That video is awesome. I watched it this morning.
He did all the engineering, paper engineering for the Star Wars pop-up books, as well as the Game of Thrones one, which was one of my favorite pop-up books, and the Harry Potter one that came out last year. So super interesting to see how that type of paper crafting is done. And once again, I'll be at the New Type HQ Gundam convention in San Francisco at the Westfield Mall this Saturday. If you're there, please say hi. Jeremy, anything from you?
No.
How about an outro?
Okay. Woolhawk is back with Data Conundrum.
Hi there, I didn't see you.
That's it.
X number of years from now, however many years from now, you could go to the store and CBS will put out a collection of every Star Trek episode ever on a piece of glass that looks like an isolinear chip. This is the only copy of Superman Returns. Drop, shatter.
I play a game of pistol whip with that music. We'll see you next week.